Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Network Sunday, December 3rd, 2017. This is episode 1445. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. And by Video Blocks by Storyblocks. Get all the high-quality stock video, audio, and images you can imagine for just $149 a year. Go to videoblocks.com/techguy today. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit the tracker.com/techguy to save 20% off any order. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Oh, my. It's time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartwatches and smartphones and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to talk high tech. I know I said it fast. I'll say it slower. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, fear not. You can still call, use Skype or Skype out or something like that. One of our engineers, Burke, gave me a Skype mouse. Wow. This is an optical mouse with built-in hi-fi speaker. It plugs into your USB port. It has its own sound card capability. And then you talk into it. Hello. What will they think of next? Remarkable. You see how what we're doing at this point is like recombinant DNA. We're just taking ideas we've already had and mushing them around till we get something new and unique. And maybe something will stick. Maybe something will stick around. Why not? Why not? If you don't have any better ideas, just kind of love it. Thank you, Burke. What are you doing for the holidays? Did you go shopping? I don't tell anybody in my family, but I did something odd. I decided to give everybody. We all have smartphones and laptops and electronics everywhere. I decided to give everybody paper notebooks. like journals, like you write in, and day planners. I don't know what came over me. I spent the morning shopping for little paper notebooks. Hey, it's something they don't have, right? And it's probably not a bad thing. I think that, keeping a journal is one of those things I always wanted to do, but never, I've started a dozen of them, and they all, have one page. Dear diary, from now on, it's like doing a blog, isn't it? Have you ever done that? You started a blog and then, I've done it a few times. You just taper off bit by bit. It's hard to keep that thing up. And yet, I think if you could get a habit of doing it every day, you'd be glad you had it. Should you do it on paper? For some people, the aesthetic, the feeling of taking pen in hand, maybe a nice fountain pen or something in hand and writing and drawing on a piece of paper in a notebook, that's important to the process. I always think, but what happens to those notebooks? There's no backup of them. You end up in a shelf somewhere in a closet, and then you hope somebody finds them someday, but they're not really permanent. Whereas, if you could use software, there's a lot of software for journaling on your phone or your tablet or your computer. You could do something and then it would be backed up and it would last forever, and still nobody would read it, of course. But That's the problem with photos, too, right? We take photos like crazy. We, you know, I'm actually very grateful because my family, my folks, and I think, I don't know if it was my mom or my dad, but they started taking pictures when I was a baby, and they did it with slide film instead of prints. And I'm actually kind of grateful to them for doing that because slide film, when you scan it, which we have done, actually produces a very good-looking image. It actually produces an image, I would say, that rivals digital photography. Isn't this funny? We've come around so far. When I first saw the first digital cameras at the end of the 90s, and I got my first digital camera about 2001, it was 3 megapixels. And we all thought, oh, someday these will be as good as film cameras, but not today. Now we're looking back and saying, you know, thank goodness they use slide film. At least that's almost as good as the as digital photography. Even a camera phone now can do better than most of those old film, certainly better than an Instamatic. So they took slides and I digitized them, and it's great to have them. Now, of course, we all, you know, it's all with camera phones, and we all have. I was just looking at my Google Photos because I recommend this. Everybody probably should use one of the many services that it offers to back up your photos from your phone. That way, you know, even if you lose your phone, you've not lost your photos. I was checking, and I think I have something like 89, I'm almost embarrassed to admit this, 89,000 photographs in my Google Photos. 89,000. And it's just a digital shoebox, isn't it? You know, are my kids going to look at those? Would they even have access to them? If I pass away, when I pass away, will I, what will happen to those? This is something we're all kind of dealing with for the first time. We have these Facebook and Twitter and all of these pages. And what happens to the content after you leave this earthly plane? It just sits there. It doesn't wear out. The kids can't come and clean it out. It just sits there. For how long? We don't even know. Could it be millennia? Will people be looking at my Google Photos library in 1,000 years? How could they even access it? Do they know the password? It's fun for me. In fact, I think Google understands that there's issues when you have, you know, all your photos in here. And so they have a little pop-up on the phone. The Google Assistant says, oh, see what you were doing 6 years ago. Rediscover this day, they call it. Here's one from 2008, 9 years ago. Stuff that I put up, well, probably these were, I guess they were digital. And I didn't have Google Photos back then, but I put them on my hard drive. And, of course, as soon as Google Photos came out, I put a little thing on my computer that backed up everything. That's how I got so many pictures up. That backed up all the pictures. So every digital photo I've taken way back to 2001 when I got my first digital camera, an Olympus C3030, I think it was, 3 megapixels. I think that's where the 30 came from. And I can go back, and it's kind of fun to have because my kids are grown, and I can go back and look at, you know, pictures. I have a video of my son reading for the first time. I thought that was great. Parents today will have pictures of their kids walking, their first words. So I love the idea, and you can search for people in Google Photos. It automatically categorizes people, places, things, all sorts of stuff. That's one of the reasons Google's giving you all that free storage, is because they're training their I don't want to make this sound scary, but they're training their artificial intelligences on your photos to understand the real world. I don't know what the final stage of this will be, or if there even is a final stage. I don't know where we're headed. Sometimes people joke that Google is Skynet. You've heard Skynet. That's the Terminator, right? They sent the machines back from the future because they wanted to prevent the machines taking over with Skynet. Google's building, you know, something. We don't really know how it's going to turn out. But I'm happy to feed them all my photos because, it's so useful to me. It's like a giant 80,000 photo shoebox. That's big. That would be the whole closet if it were prints. But I can. And by the way, I put the family slides up there too, right? So they're searchable now. I like doing that. And I know people are worried about privacy and so forth, but once you give up on privacy, which I have, then you can play with all these fun toys. And not, why worry? Why? Maybe Google's building an artificial intelligence that'll take over the world. Why worry about it? Just go ahead, put your photos up there. What do you think? Am I nuts? I'll tell you what. I'm not here to pontificate, to philosophize. I'm here to take your phone call. So let's do that. Again, the phone number 888-827-5536. What are you going to do with all your digital data? Are you going to will it to your kids? 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking deep subjects today. I want to use this, but it's sticky. Yeah, da da da. What do I need? It's old? This is old? Where'd you find it?
I can't tell you, but it's never been used. Look in the position.
Something is degraded on this. Do you have maybe a wipe or something? Because it's like, it's literally, it wouldn't, it's... Oh, John got something. Let's see if this comes off. And maybe the rubber is falling apart. This is from the Berg collection. It's old, he says. It's from the Berg collection. But, you know, in principle, I like this idea. It's a mouse with a built-in A to D converter. So it's a little sound card.
All the way up to Vista.
Oh, it's compatible with... Let's see what happens with Windows. It shouldn't be any problem with Windows 10. I'm gonna predict.
But it's, you know, 98 ME.
Yeah, yeah.
XP.
So it's not that old. If it mentioned Vista, Vista came out in 2009, 2008, something like that. I'm going to plug it in. I think it's just going to recognize it. Let's see. Yeah. Oh, it came out of... Did you hear that?
Yeah.
The ding-a-loon came out of the mouse.
I think that's your speaker now. Play some music.
Device is ready. Wow. Well, first of all, is it a mouse? Yes, it works as a mouse. Okay. Should I play some music?
Well, let's see if it comes out this speaker.
Yeah, probably will. Let's do Google Music. I should probably pay attention to what's going on here. I get all excited about these things. Yeah. Google Play Music. What do you think? Music is going
to
come out of here? I think it will.
I think it grabbed it.
Was this in your grandpa's attic?
No. You just bought it.
Bought it just for you.
You did? All right, let's play some fine classical music. It's a musical mouse. Wow.
Leo, you have to say, hello, computer.
Hello, computer. Use the keyboard. The keyboard. How quaint. Use the mouse. No, use the keyboard.
Leo, use the mouse.
Use the mouse.
Pick up the mouse and go, hello, computer.
Hello, computer. Wow. Well, now let me fire up Skype.
Microphone?
It'll work. I can make a Skype call. Let's call the Skype lady.
Hello. Welcome to Skype call testing service. After the beep, please record a message. Afterwards, your message will be played back to you.
Hello. Hello, Skype lady. It's me. I'm talking into my mouse. I have the world's first Skype mouse. How does it sound? You tell me. Okay, Skype lady, back to you.
Skype lady, it's me. I'm talking into my mouse. I have it, the world's first Skype mouse. How does it sound? You tell me.
Okay, Skype. I'm alive.
This is my new...
If you're able to hear your own voice, then you have configured Skype correctly. If you hear this message, but not your own voice...
Oh, I heard my own voice. Thank you, Skype lady. That is wonderful, Burke. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. And there she is, perched on her inflatable chair. Kim Schaffer, bouncing up and down.
Bouncing on the ball.
Did you see this wonderful birthday gift I got from Burke?
I did. I wonder if he got that at the Goodwill or something.
It's funny because it's a Skype. It's a mouse. And it works. By the way, it's on the box. It says it works all the way up to Windows Vista.
So it's old.
It's an antique. But it works fine. I'm running it on Windows 10. It worked just fine. I plugged it in. It's a mouse. I can point with it. And I can even make, and the idea, this is the idea, is I can make Skype call. You want to hear me? Shall I make a Skype call?
Who are you going to call?
I'll call the, you know what we do, we call the Skype lady.
Hello, welcome to Skype call testing.
She's coming out of my mouse.
After the beep, please record a message.
It's a little speaker.
Afterwards,
but it works. Wait a minute, let's try it. Hello, Skype lady. This is Leo Laporte, broadcasting from the future. It is now the year 27...
Skype lady, this is Leo Laporte, broadcasting from the future.
It works.
It sounds like it
works.
Only gives you a certain amount of time to talk. Cut you off.
Well, it's only a test.
This is a test.
So I call her Skype lady. That's on Skype. They have it's a test line. Echo 123. You call and you can hear yourself back. Well, that's very cool. Watson, come here. I need you. I've invented the telephone mouse. Wow. What do you think Alexander Graham Bell would think if he showed him this?
His mind would be blown if you showed him the iPhone and all the other things.
Well, no, I know, of course. That would be impressive. But if he looked at this, he would say, oh, that's what the future should look like. This is what they thought in 1904 when they thought the future. They'd say, yes, you'll have a device that you can talk to the world. Wow. Well, that is a wonderful novelty item. Unfortunately, it's been in the box so long, it's really sticky. I don't want to know why. I think something has degraded. Some of the rubber or plastic or something has degraded. Anyway, none of this is important because what's really important on this show is our callers. And you have been gathering them. Gather ye callers why ye may, so that we can do a show. So I see them, many people. Who should I start
with?
Well,
do you want to start off easy or
yes.
do you want to start off hard?
Easy.
Okay, well then.
You know, I always tell my kids, I said, there's two ways you can go. You can go hard, easy, easy, hard. I say, always do hard, easy, because then life will be easy at the end. But no, I'm going to be lazy.
Well, then you can spend someone's money instead of a question that you
should
may
all
not
get
be
this
able to
fine
answer.
Computer mouse is what you should do. The Skype mouse is fabulous. All right, who would that be?
Jason in Richmond, Virginia needs a new laptop, and he has a couple models, and he wants to run them past you. You
knew I'd talk to Jason,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I did.
Thank you, Kim. Hello, Jason. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Love what you do and love all the stuff on your network. Appreciate
it. Thank you very much.
Yep. Quick side note, if you don't mind, you're talking about pictures and preserving them and that
kind
of thing. Other suggestion would be to also make sure to record audio of your children as they're
growing. What a good idea. Yeah.
I know somebody who did that, Jonathan Mosen did a really neat podcast. And when his daughter was 21 or 22 or something, he did an audio collage of all of her little talking through the years of him interviewing her about.
Oh, what a great idea. Because those little childish voices go away and you never hear them again. It'd be fun to have that as.
Yeah, unless they're a supermodel or something and they don't get rid of it.
Actually, what I wish I had done, and I advise everybody, whenever at any age, is to as you're taking pictures, every camera will do this, and every camera phone, shoot just a few seconds of video. Of course, that includes audio as well.
Absolutely.
And it's a nice scene setter, and then you have that in addition to the stills, and I think that's a great idea. I do have this precious video of my son reading for the first time. He was
I remember that.
Yeah, I never forget that. What can I do for you today, sir?
Yes, sir. Needed a new laptop for a couple years. Finally decided I'll actually spend the money and get one. Looking at a couple options, which are somewhat similar but a little bit different. One of which is your recommendation, the Lenovo 4700S, I believe.
Yeah.
And the other one is the XPS 13.
You couldn't go wrong with either one.
I guess a couple pieces of information that may help. Not really interested in going portable in terms of, you know, walking around. It's going to be at a desktop most of the time, plugged into a external or a wireless keyboard. But you know, on a rare occasion I'll be taking it somewhere, but in general, no, I just want something with a lot of power. I was considering the Lenovo just because the upgradability seems a little better.
It's very high, and the repairability is very high on the Lenovo. They kind of focus, and we're talking, when we talk about this, we're talking about the business Lenovos, the ThinkPads, and those are really designed very differently than the consumer-grade Lenovos. In fact, this is true across the board. Dell does the same thing. They have the consumer-grade, less expensive, so that's the one that draws people's eyes. But when you get the business ones, they tend to be more repairable. Lenovo has really excellent repair options, you know, extended warranty options.
Right.
And but also, you can do it yourself, and a lot of, there are a lot of parts widely available for Lenovos. I think the keyboards are better on the Lenovos.
That's right.
The Dell is not bad. It's funny because Dell has followed a trend that other manufacturers have followed. The keyboards on many laptops are worse and worse and worse. I have a 2013 XPS 13 that has just a fabulous soft keyboard. And then the more recent ones, they're getting – the reason is they want them to be thinner and thinner. And so keyboard travel means you have to have more room to press that key. I think, and I think many touch typists like some feedback as we hit a key, that the travel tells you you've hit the key. And in these modern notebooks, the worst of which, of course, is Apple's MacBook Pro, the new one with the butterfly keys. And I'll have to include the Surface Pro from Microsoft with that little just cover. It's a keyboard cover. And it's as bad as Chiclet keys. So if that's important to you, and it's important to me, if you're doing a lot of typing, that's a big thing. I think that there's nobody better than the ThinkPads. Even they are not as good as they used to be, but they're still very good.
I'll be mostly using external keyboards.
Okay, so you don't care about that. What you really care about is upgradability and portability is not so important. Battery life's not so important.
Right.
Are you looking at the screen?
Not really. I'm a JAWS user, so that's not a big deal either. I just want a lot of power.
And that's one of the big selling points on the Dells is their bezel-less screen, which I think is gorgeous, but you don't care at all.
Nope.
So
I can buy it without the screen.
You don't care at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think anything is going to be powerful enough for what kind of programs, besides JAWS, what kind of things are you using?
Just basic web, office programs. That kind of thing.
None of that's very challenging. So first thing I would do, you may be tempted because you say, I want power, to get an i7 processor.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm not sure I would. You've probably heard me say in the past that within the constraints of the laptop, where heat dissipation is a huge issue in laptops, they really slow those i7s down. And it's rare that you'll get a laptop with the top-of-the-line Intel processor running at full speed. It just would be too hot. So they'll, even if you get an i7, they'll never really get to their top speed. You know, they'll say, well, we can go up to 4 gigahertz, but you'll never see it.
That's fair, yeah. What about the difference between a 7th-gen and 8th-gen Intel processor?
These new 8th-gens, because they have quad-core in laptops, that you'd notice. What you'd notice most, frankly, is RAM.
Yep.
Because you're running JAWS, a speech synthesis program, while other programs are running, and it takes a lot of memory itself. So what I would do is look at which notebook you could get 12 or 16 or even 24 gigs of RAM in. This ThinkPad has 24. That will make the biggest difference of all, in my opinion. Of course, a solid-state drive, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, your needs are unique, obviously, and and so no, but that's good. So, and this is where running on Windows is great because you have so many choices.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to check, because the problem is unless I get into the touchscreen version of the XPS, I can only go up to, it looks like, 8 gigs and a 256 SSD.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's not great. No, I would go. So the one I'm using is the T470S.
That's what I'm looking at.
Starts at $800.
Yep.
The negative on this is it's not a great screen. You don't care.
And one of the issues I initially had was, and I was going to give you a little hard time about it, was, you know, the problems that Lenovo had with putting that malware on their machine.
I agree.
And
that's, they never did it to the ThinkPad line.
That's
so they did all that stuff to the consumer grades, which is, and you probably remember I said I will never buy Lenovo again.
I definitely remember. That's why I was going to give you a hard time.
I can't recommend them anymore. But the truth is, A, I think that they've learned their lesson. And people are watching them carefully. So sometimes you do better getting somebody who has failed in that regard.
It's like going to a restaurant after they, you know, the inspection. Right?
They're going to be clean.
Yeah.
So, A, and B, they've never did that with ThinkPad. The ThinkPad division is still out of North Carolina. It's the same people who were doing it when it was IBM.
Yeah.
And so I think that they just say, yeah, you do whatever you want, you Lenovo consumer guys. We're going to make a solid business machine.
Okay.
So you can get for around $1,000 a pretty nice machine. I'm going to look at the customization here, though.
And yeah, I got one in my cart now.
I'm going to see how much RAM I can get in this.
I like the fingerprint reader.
That is great for you. That's fantastic because you don't have to type a password or anything. It just loads right away.
Yep.
You can get up to 20. It looks like 20 plus 16. So you can get a lot of RAM in this.
And let me ask you, it looks like that's user upgradable. So I could start with low, right, and then upgrade.
Yeah, you should look at what the SIMs are. You may have to take the old one out if you do.
Yeah.
Right.
Because it looks like some is soldered and then some is just
exactly. Exactly.
Is that common now, or is that just there?
That's Lenovo. That's why I love Lenovo. Most everybody else, Surface mounts the memory.
Yeah, that's what I was
Once thought. You buy an Apple MacBook Pro, you can't do anything to it. It's the way it is.
Yeah, but, and I have an old. I've been running boot camp on an old Mac, so I'm just. I just need to finally go Windows.
So, for instance, you add, a little $300, and you can get. There's 20 gigs soldered. A DDR4 RAM soldered on the motherboard, and then they put a 16 gig SODIMM for a total of 36 gigs. That's a lot of memory. You don't probably need that much.
No.
But no, to my knowledge, this is very rare in laptops.
Yeah, okay.
And that, to me, the SSD, and because that's going to load stuff faster, boot faster, and the RAM, which is means you can run JAWS, keep JAWS running all the time. You can have many tabs open in your browser. All of that stuff will work better together.
Exactly.
I think those are the things you care about. And for that, I don't think you can beat ThinkPad.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's actually what I'm going to do now that you've kind of eased my mind about it.
And we're still hovering around $1,000 here. We haven't done a whole lot to make this, fancy.
Oh, really? Okay. I need to look at my configuration then because I'm at like 1200 with.
Well, you can get, you can get more RAM and, it depends what you put in there. I wouldn't worry about the screen, obviously. That'll save you money.
Yep. And you're right about the, I didn't think about the i7.
Yeah. Turn off the i7. The i5 is going to be plenty fast. That goes to 3.1 or even 3.5 gigahertz.
Okay.
You get a little more, get more cash in there, so it might make a difference. But what you're doing is not particularly demanding. I wouldn't worry about that.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate everything you
My
do.
My pleasure.
Honesty about everything on your network. And
thank you.
Thank you, Leo.
Thank you, Jason. Have a good one. Take
you
care.
Too.
Bye-bye. Oh, that was very nice. That was sweet. Jason called me on the carpet, our last caller. He said, we talked, and I said basically on his needs that Lenovo is probably the best choice. But I remember, Leo, not so long ago, a couple of years ago, you said, I will never again recommend Lenovo. Because, and maybe you remember this too, Lenovo got caught twice putting bad stuff on their laptops. Superfish was the first one. And, Lenovo can't say they didn't know about this. This was put on so that they could inject advertising into the laptops. And they got caught in early 2015. And then they got caught doing it again. I'm trying to remember what the second one was. Shortly thereafter, it was no more than 6 months later. I seem to feel like the Superfish put a bogus root certificate on there, and that was bad. But again, it wasn't intended to be a security flaw, even though it was just intended to put a little extra advertising on your screen, both of which I think are bad things. So at the time, I was very upset, and I said, yes, Lenovo, you're bad. You deserve to be punished. I won't recommend you anymore. But over time, two things have happened. One, this never happened to the ThinkPad line. The Lenovo ThinkPad line, it was something they bought from IBM, the IBM ThinkPads, and these were always great, robust, powerful, upgradable, configurable business computers. They were really always great. And the team that made the ThinkPad, they're in North Carolina. I think they're still involved in this. And I think I'm going to guess But I'm thinking they said, no way on our watch you're going to put that stuff on our system. So ThinkPads, when you get them, have very little third-party software on there. They don't come with all the junkware, all the trialware. They're as close to signature PCs as possible. So that's one reason I'm not too worried. They never did any of that nasty stuff to the business machines. They only did it to the consumer-grade machines, the very low-price machines. They're trying to make more money, right? The other thing is... they got caught. And I think in some respects, you can trust them more because they got caught. People are going to be watching. They're going to be scrutinizing Lenovo's. They're going to be saying, is there anything else on there? So I think now that, I'm taking them out of jail. 2 years later, they paid the price. I'm taking them out of jail because I think they realized the error of their ways. And I think it's very unlikely they'll ever do that again. So I feel like it's safe to use Lenovo's. I think they are great laptops that with a great history, by the way. John Glenn used a ThinkPad when he flew on the shuttle. NASA has more than 500 ThinkPad 750s qualified for flight. They were used to support the Hubble repair mission. There are 3 ThinkPads left on the Mir space station. That no one will get again because the module is depressurized. They're good enough for NASA. I feel like they're good enough for you and me. They're well made. I've been very happy. It's so much so that I actually own 2 late model ThinkPads. I'm very happy with them. Sitting right in front of a T470S. So that's why you might, Leo, you're a hypocrite. You said you'd never recommend them again, and I put them in jail for a while. But I think it's they've done their. Penance. They've served their time, and I think it's maybe time to look back at them again. And I have to say, I've been very, very happy. Now, of course, got to keep an eye on them. And everybody, Lenovo's not the only company that's done this kind of thing. In fact, the Superfish is a product made for companies to put on laptops. And they said this is a commercial product. So others, I imagine, are doing the same thing. No evidence of anything like that. Now, the latest, of course. And this is true for many, many Windows PCs. They come with Intel has been building into the system on a chip something they call the management engine, which businesses like because they can remotely manage their computers. And if you get a system that has the word vPro in it, it's designed for business, designed to be remotely managed. Unfortunately, the Intel management engine is buggy and has security flaws in it. In fact, so much so, for a while, we thought you had to actually open it up to access it. Now we know you can program the management engine to act maliciously just by plugging something into the USB port. So Intel has issued a patch. And Lenovo was, by the way, the very first company to send that patch out to its customers. There are companies like now Dell and others, System 76, which makes machines for the Linux world, who are disabling the management engine. They're actually physically disabling it before they ship their computers out. You can get, if you go to Dell, an Intel laptop with a disabled management engine. This is another problem. And, I think this is a problem in general with this stuff. And if you think about it, there's a lot of trust when you use technology. We act as if these things you can trust them, but really, if you think about it, anytime you're running a program you didn't write, or you didn't examine the source code and compile it yourself, which is pretty much everything, certainly everything on a smartphone, you're trusting the people who made that software. You're trusting the people who make the hardware. There's a lot of trust that goes into this, but isn't life essentially a trust exercise? I mean, when you drive down a 2-lane blacktop, you're trusting the guy coming in the other direction is not going to veer into your lane. If you didn't trust that, you wouldn't be able to drive. You'd be in terror the whole time. It's kind of what life is all about. And so we don't really think about it. But if you're an IT professional, unfortunately, that trust has been breached so many times. by Lenovo and others, and by bad guys. And so we now train our IT professionals. There should be somebody in every organization who is very cynical, trusts no one, worries about everything. You don't want to live that way, but it's good to have somebody in your organization who's paying attention to that stuff. And I hope you do. And if you're in a business and you have a lot of Intel-based Windows machines, which you almost certainly do, I hope you have somebody you can go to in the business and ask them this question. What about the Intel management engine? What are you doing to mitigate that, to prevent that from being a security flaw in our business? And if you have a good IT person who is truly cynical and trusts nothing, she will have already fixed that for you. But I don't want us. We shouldn't have to worry about that. You and I should be able to blithely go about our way, buying computers, using smartphones, because this technology really is valuable. It really is a great thing. It really is useful. And if it just like driving down a two-lane blacktop, you need to get somewhere. You get in the car. Otherwise, you become agoraphobic. You never leave the house. And that's, I guess, why some people don't leave the house. You'd never use technology. You'd never get on the internet. And we've all met plenty of people who are suspicious. I'm not going to use that Google. I don't trust that Google. What are they up to? Facebook, what are they up to? You know, who knows? Who knows? Let's hope that there are a few people out there who are cynical and looking into it. And there, believe me, there are a lot of, they call them gray hats, who are looking at the output, the data coming out of your phone, whether that software's phoning the home office and sending data back. And that's why we're hearing a lot about it these days, because people are doing that actively. But you and I don't need to. Just listen to this show. I'll let you know. I'll give you the warning. Meanwhile, though, I think technology's got a lot of value, and I'd like to keep using it, if you don't mind, without having to feel fearful and cynical. 8888 Ask Leo. We'll go back to the phones in just a moment. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Going to line three, Paul in Delaware, Ohio. Hello, Paul.
Oh. Hey, Leo.
Hey, Paul.
How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm a FCLL, first-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you.
I've dialed your number many times and hung up. I've been listening, oh, God, 20 years.
Wow, that's not... Why'd you hang up? You got scared?
Yeah, I was just in... I usually listen to your show while I'm doing things, like in the yard or driving. I travel a little bit, and your podcasts keep me company.
Nice. Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Keep listening.
I have a rhetorical question, and I have a real question. The rhetorical question is, do you think they'd ever make a hard drive that could hold all the information in the world?
Oh, wow. Isn't that an interesting question? So wouldn't that be cool? In fact, in a lot of science fiction, I think of Neuromancer from William Gibson. He has a laptop computer, old beat-up laptop computer that has, effectively, all the information in the world. Would you be content to have all the information in the Library of Congress?
Well, more like all the information. Like, would they ever be able to make a laptop or a tower that would hold maybe all the information Google has right now?
Well, we don't know how much information there is in the world, but it's estimated that by the year 2025, there will be 163 zettabytes. that's a trillion gigabytes. So 163 trillion gigabytes. Now, the largest drive I've seen out there, I think, is 8,000 gigabytes. So we're making progress.
All righty.
But that's a lot of storage. I don't think a single drive will ever get like that. But I can imagine arrays. And really, truthfully, that's what the internet is good for, isn't it? If you think about it, with the internet, as long as you have an internet connection to a computer, the computer has access to maybe not every bit of data in the world, but an awful lot of data. You know, according to IDC, which is a research group, we are creating new data at the rate of 16.3 trillion gigabytes a year. In other words, wow. Even though our capacity to store things gets high faster and faster, I don't know if we'd ever catch up. You know what I'm saying? So I think we should just be. Yeah, it is mind-boggling, and I think given that data, the amount of data we're creating is increasing exponentially every year. I suspect that's faster than the capacity of hard drives are increasing. So, to answer your rhetorical question, even though rhetorical questions beg no answer, I'd say no.
Okay. All right. All right, my second question is, we have a lot of dogs in our family, and some of them are runners, and I tried the tracker tracking device. Is there anything else out there that would cover like a mile radius with just the output of the device instead of using like a crowdsourced?
Yeah, so what you want is a device that can hold a GPS, and the reason you don't – they absolutely have them. The reason you don't see them a lot is because they're big and they have to be charged. So if you have a big dog, if you have a Labrador or bigger, yes, there are a number of collars with GPS built into them. I'll give you a couple of examples. One would be the Nuzzle GPS collar. But it's 1.5 ounces. It's not huge. It's just bulky.
Right.
And so it would absolutely work. Then the other negative, remember, is you're going to pay for a cellular subscription because it's one thing.
Alrighty.
Yeah, it's one thing to have a GPS, but you've got to also broadcast it, right?
Right. Like a cell phone.
Yeah. So there's a less expensive one that's fairly new, and I don't know anybody who's tried it, but maybe somebody listening has, called the Whistle. WHISTL, like you whistle for your dog. That is also that's an $80 GPS tracker. They use the AT&T network, and it will locate your pet anywhere in the world. Basically, it has certainly. Well, let's put it this way: anywhere where AT&T reaches, so anywhere in the U.S. If your dog gets on a boat and sails to China, you might be out of luck. You get location. You get location alerts. One of the things that's really fun for people who do this is. You can get a track of where your dog has gone, you know, so you can see, because don't you wonder sometimes, well, what's he doing all day?
Yeah.
Less so with a dog, but with cats, I'm always wondering where they go all day. Where do they disappear to? So the Whistle, I would read reviews before you jump on it. PDO in the chat room says he tried a Whistle and it didn't work for him. So and they're bulky, but the Whistle is the least expensive of the ones I've seen at $70-$80. Then you're going to have to, of course, pay for the AT&T service. Okay.
The problem with the tracker was I don't think they're getting the enough people are buying them quick enough to really get us.
The tracker, and I should say the tracker is a sponsor of our podcast. The tracker doesn't have GPS, so you see a lot of these Bluetooth trackers, Tile Tracker, many others. They're smaller. The tracker you could easily put on a small dog or a cat, but it doesn't have GPS. It just has Bluetooth. So as soon as the dog or cat goes outside of range of your phone, you don't know where that, you know, then it's not on the map anymore unless they go within range of somebody else who's running that software. And then that software notices it's using something called Bluetooth LE. It doesn't have to pair to the phone. The phone could just see it. And it says, there's that cat, and will ping you. So it doesn't give you as complete a track, and you're exactly right. It's no good if people in your area aren't using either Tile or Tracker or one of the other systems. I use a tracker, and whenever I fire it up, it tells you how many tracker users there are in your area. Hmm. In my area, it's about 2,700, so I think it would probably work somewhat. That's not so good for just seeing where the cat or dog goes. That's more for, he's been missing for a day. Where is he? And that might be a little more useful there. The good thing on the track, see the Whistle every day, the dog has to come back and you have to take the Whistle and plug it into the USB port and charge it.
Okay.
The tracker will go a year and then you can replace the battery. It's not a rechargeable.
Yeah, I bought a bunch of trackers. They're pretty good for what they do. Hopefully sometime in the future someone will come up with something that puts out a better signal.
I can promise you that that's going to happen. Unlike this zettabyte hard drive, I can promise you that GPS is going to get smaller and smaller. And, you know, I don't think it's very many years away before we see GPS everywhere. And, of course, as things get smaller, interestingly, their power requirements lower. So
right,
I think it's...
Robin said she'll have one implanted in her head.
I think we're going to see that at some point where people can chip themselves. They can't currently chip themselves with a GPS device because of the need for power. But I wouldn't be surprised to see a GPS device with a battery that can last a year or two. And is small enough to implant or certainly to put in many, many devices. You're going to see GPS everywhere.
Maybe with a solar or charger attached. Right. All right, Leo, it was fun talking with you. I'm glad I got a chance to call.
Great question. That was a...
Yeah, it was fun.
Thank you, Paul. Keep calling. Now that you've come and found the way, stay in touch. Yeah, the other problem the GPS has is it doesn't work when you're out of line of sight of the satellites. It requires a view of the sky. So you probably noticed this. When you go in a garage, your GPS stops working, or in a tunnel. And you'd have the same problem with a dog. If the dog is under the house, you're not going to know where the dog is. So some sort of combination of Bluetooth tracking and GPS, I imagine, will be the wave of the future. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after news at the top of the hour. My friends, it's time to mention our fine sponsor, Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. You should know the name Quicken Loans, if only because Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland, right? But no, you should know the name. This is a really forward-thinking company. They're based in Detroit. They're revitalizing downtown Detroit. They've done so much to help Detroit. They're smart people. They're technology-focused people. And they've decided that the mortgage industry needed a revamp. It was stuck back in the 20th century, really, maybe the 19th century. And that's true. I can vouch for it. Our last home loan I got from a bank, we went to the lender, hat in hand, in effect, you know. You put on a suit and tie. You want to look good. The lender had this was state of the art. It was only 3 years ago, a calculator that you would enter in the balance, the term, and it would tell you what your payment would be. He was so proud of that. Here's what your payment would be. But now if you get this loan, here's what your payment would be. And then that's not all, because then you go home. Oh, good. Okay, we like that loan. You know, I'm assuming that he gave us the best loan. He had a sheaf of papers, you know, an inch tall. I'm assuming he picked the right one out of there. Then you go home, and then you go into the attic, and you call the banks because you got to get all the paperwork. You got to get the pay stubs and the check statement. It goes on. It was endless. It actually took us more than a month. And they kept coming back to us saying, well, we want this, we want that, we want this. And it was very frustrating. We almost lost the house. The seller said, when are you getting the loan? I'm going to sell it to somebody else. Well, if I were going to do it today, I would use Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. It's an entirely online mortgage process. There's no guy with a green eye shade and a calculator anymore. It's all computerized. And you can do it right now. They'll do it while you wait. No going to the attic for paperwork. All you do is you go to rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. You give them the few basic information. They'll say, oh, yeah, we've got relationships with your bank and all the financial institutions. They pull your stuff. They crunch the numbers. They don't have a calculator, my friends. They got a giant mainframe computer. And based on your income, your assets, and your credits, they're going to say, here's what you qualify for. Now you pick the loan rate. Now you pick the term. You pick the down payment. You're approved. In minutes. Not a month. Minutes. That's Rocket Mortgage. You can apply simply online, on your phone. Understand fully every step of the way and then mortgage with confidence. RocketMortgage.com/tech guy. That's RocketMortgage.com/tech guy. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. You can better believe this is what I'm doing next time. We buy that house in Hawaii. Rocket Mortgage, baby. Aloha. RocketMortgage.com/tech. I tell you what, even if you're not buying a house today, bookmark that so you have it, or tell your friends. RocketMortgage.com/tech guy. And we thank them for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk tech, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. 8888. Ask Leo. That is my phone number if you want to talk high tech. 888-827-5536. It's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. About half an hour from now, digital photography expert Chris Marquardt will be here. And I am going to ask Chris to help us take pictures of the moon tonight because it's a super moon. We haven't had one in about a year. It just means it's a little bit bigger. It's not super. Maybe super is not the right word for it. It's an XL moon, an extra large moon. Slightly XL. Not XXL, just XL. But it'll be fun to get a full moon picture. And there are things you can do to prepare for tonight and figure out where you want to be and how you can get the best images of that supermoon. So maybe we'll talk about that in about half an hour. Meanwhile, let's get back to the phones. I mentioned Jay was on the line, and he is still. Thank you for hanging on, Jay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, I wanted to find out if you prefer U-Matrix or NoScript or perhaps some other option when you want to block a script.
Yeah, NoScript, of course, is the power tool for all this, and I don't use it, and I'll tell you why. So what Jay's talking about, and remember I was talking earlier in the show about you want to have somebody at work who's paranoid and cynical and thinks the worst of all men and assumes that the any website you're going to is laden with bad stuff. Those are the guys who are running NoScript. NoScript blocks JavaScript. Now, JavaScript is pretty critical to almost every website. It is not a optional feature of most websites. However, it does indeed have the potential to do bad things. Any website can do bad things in a variety of ways. So, but there are those who say, well, I'm not going to allow JavaScript on any site unless I explicitly permit it. In other words, the way it works right now, JavaScript is permitted unless you explicitly, you know, say no. With NoScript, you can, and I presume U-Matrix, I haven't used U-Matrix, but with NoScript and U-Matrix, you can say no scripts are allowed unless I give explicit permission. But what you'll find, I've used NoScript, and what you'll find is that as you're using the browser, you keep getting bugged. Hey, do you want to run scripts here? Do you want to run scripts here? Do you want to run scripts here? Because there aren't many sites in the world that don't use some JavaScript. So I don't use that. Here's what I do use if you want to kind of protect yourself against malicious scripts. And I'll give you an example. We talked yesterday about CoinHive. There are a lot of websites these days that are making money not by showing you ads, but by running a little bit of code on your computer. On your computer, you visit the website, your computer is doing the work trying to generate cryptocurrency, something like Bitcoin called Ethereum. And the site does this because it's a way of monetizing. If a million people visit the site and they can generate a couple of Ethereum coins, they're going to make some money. And they do it using JavaScript. That's how powerful JavaScript is. You could block all JavaScript, or you could use a program that just tries to prevent things like that. And that's what I use. And it's called uBlock Origin. And it's free. It's a plugin you can run in either the Chrome browser. It also works in Microsoft's Edge browser. It also works in the Firefox browser. And it is an ad blocker. Now, I have mixed feelings about ad blockers because, as you know, this show is paid for by advertising. Everything I do is paid for by advertising. All my podcasts, all my radio shows, my blogs, everything I do is free because I don't want to make people sign up. If you go to techguylabs.com, we don't ask for your email address. We don't make you sign up. It's free. But the reason I can do that, I have to make a living. I have to pay rent. I have to buy beanie weenies for dinner. I'm not, you know, I like everybody in this world, we have to make a living. So the way I can do that is by ad-supported free media. And I'm a fan of that because it's essentially democratic. Now, I think we do it pretty well. We're careful. I only do ads for companies I like and products I use. And so I feel like it's, you know, yeah, it'd be great if I could just say to you, please send me money. And I wouldn't have to have ads, but most people won't. And also, it leaves people out. And I want everybody to be able to consume these shows and learn about technology. I think it's very important that everybody learn about technology, even if they don't have a couple of bucks a month to pay for it. So that's why we do ad-supported media. If you're going to a website and reading the content on a website, whether it's The Verge or Engadget or Tech Guy Labs, and you're not looking at the ads, you're basically well, I'd have to talk to an ethicist, but it's close to stealing, isn't it? Because the deal the website's making is, we'll give you content, but you've got to help us pay for it by seeing ads. And when you run an ad blocker, you're kind of undermining that. However, ads have, I understand why people run ad blockers. In fact, why I run an ad blocker, because there are other reasons you don't want ads. Ads sometimes, in fact, not uncommon for ads to carry malware. The way ad systems work on the internet with Google and other companies is they're automatic. So if I'm a bad guy, I can buy an ad unit, get it on your page. If it's not plain text, if it's got Flash in it or JavaScript in it, I can use it to attack your system. In some cases, even to put malware on your system. And Google might, you know, eventually catch me, but there'll be a little moment of opportunity when I bought the ad and it's running and people get it. And there are many sites, including big sites like Forbes.com, that have put malware in people's machines because of the automatic ad placement. So that's one reason. Another reason is these ads are big. They often triple, quadruple, even more, increase the size of a web page. And if you're on mobile especially, it can be a problem. That's why Apple included ad blocking capabilities in its iOS, starting with iOS, was it 9 or 10? And you can run an ad blocker on Safari and iOS. Because mobile, you know, bandwidth's very constrained. You have a very limited page. It's not uncommon to go to a page you can't even read on mobile because there's so many ads covering everything up. So there are good reasons to run an ad blocker. My suggestion, and the way I get around it, is I run an ad blocker, but I turn it off on sites that are okay, you know, that I deem to be safe and that are ad supported. And that's what I'd encourage you to do. uBlock Origin does block these Bitcoin and Ethereum sites. So CoinHive, if I go to CoinHive.com with uBlock Origin running, it says, uBlock Origin has prevented the following page from loading because of the following filter. It's explicitly blocked. And you can also disable it temporarily or permanently. Rather than blocking all JavaScript, I think this is a better way to go. It protects you against known problems, protects you against scripts running that are, you know, devious, without completely making the web unusable. Because when you block JavaScript, you try it. Go ahead and install NoScript. It's a free plugin for Chrome, Firefox too, and try it, and you'll see it makes it very hard to use the internet without JavaScript. Every site, my site uses Java. Every site uses JavaScript. It's a critical functionality in the web. But blocking malicious traffic and ads and so forth is not a bad idea. uBlock Origin, it's free, does a very, very good job. I would just say turn it off. In fact, more and more when you go to sites, you'll see, hey, you're running an ad blocker. You know, that's how we make a living. Would you mind turning it off? And I usually do when they say that. And that way you can protect yourself without undermining kind of the economics of a lot of the web pages we use all the time. 8888 Ask Leo. Good question. I appreciate your asking, Jay. uBlock Origin is my preferred choice, but the good news is you can try all of these, including NoScript free, and see what you think. Steve Gibson, my paranoid, cynical security friend, he runs NoScript, of course. 8888 Ask Leo. More of your calls coming up after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. I love all the music you're playing. Michael Cozio, musical director. He makes me smile with his silly little songs. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number you'll be calling. Kim Schaffer, again, our photo expert, Chris Marquardt's going to join us. I just checked with Chrissy. We will talk about taking pictures of that giant moon we're getting tonight. Meanwhile, let's go to Tampa, Florida. Aaron on the line. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, Leo. Long time listener, second time caller.
Welcome. Good to have you.
Very good. I just received for a birthday for my kids some an Echo Show and Echo Dots.
Oh, your kids like you. That's a nice gift. That is a great gift.
Very good.
Yeah.
I reached the big 7'7", so they finally took care of me. So what I've been trying to do, where it seems to be, is listen to you live. I'm able to get your podcast.
Yeah.
Is
so, yes, it totally is. In fact, to my knowledge, all of the devices that let you talk to them, including Amazon's Echo, the Google device, the Google Home devices, and even the Cortana device from Harman Kardon, the Invoke. All of them will let you play our stuff. But as with all of these devices, you have to know the magic words. It's like the genie in the bottle, or the gate and the mountain of Mordor that the hobbits had to get through. You have to know the secret phrase.
Yes,
so,
I do.
In the case of Echo, our shows and our podcasts come to you courtesy of one of the services Echo links to, which is called TuneIn.
TuneIn
Internet Radio is the full name, but TuneIn is all you need to know.
TuneIn.
And the TuneIn is nice because it's automatically linked. You don't have to sign. Some of the other things, like your music system, if you want to use Spotify or whatever, you have to sign in and configure the Echo to do that. But it uses TuneIn automatically.
Okay, then that's, you solved my one thing. I had a... Another quick question. Yeah,
well, let me give you the full syntax so you can. So if you want to listen to what's going on live, because we do a live audio stream, we even do a live video stream, but I'll do the live audio stream first. You just say listen to, and my podcast network is called TWIT.
Yes.
Okay, TWIT. It stands for This Week in Tech. So listen to TWIT live on TuneIn. We'll give you whatever we're listening to, right, whatever we're doing right now. And right now I'm doing the radio show. But there's other stuff too, as you know. And we even do reruns. So there's always something on that. You can watch it on YouTube. So instead of tune in, you'll use YouTube. You could say watch on your show with the one with the screen. You say watch TWIT Live on YouTube. And it will play the video.
Yeah.
And you could substitute for TWIT Live any of the podcasts. So the Tech Guy is the podcast. And by the way, a caller called last week and said it's not working. They're not all there. We talked to TuneIn and there was an issue. Something got stuck. And I think it's fixed now. But you could say listen to the Tech Guy with Leo Laporte if it doesn't work. But listen to the Tech Guy on TuneIn. We'll give you the audio. Watch the Tech Guy on YouTube. We'll give you the video of the most recent podcast. And that works for all of our shows.
Very good. I really appreciate that.
My pleasure.
I had one thing. You had mentioned a couple weeks ago that Google was coming out with a sound bar for your...
Yeah.
I'm watching you on the computer, and I'm getting flustered.
I know. Oh, yes. Stop it now. Don't get it. We always say, turn down your radio. Now we have to start saying, turn down the stream.
No, I have the volume all the way.
Oh, good. But the screen. Don't look at the screen. Don't look at me. Don't look at me. Don't look at me.
I'm closing my eyes. You had mentioned Google was coming out in December with a sound system for your TV.
So Google has a system very similar to your Echo called the Google Home. And they come in three sizes, mini, normal, and maxi. So the Google Home Max is a bigger speaker with a more high-quality speaker. Now, I have to say, the Echo Show you have, the one with the screen, has a very good speaker in it, I think.
Yes, it does.
I think that sounds fabulous. Better than the Dot, obviously. But the Dot's designed to hook up to other speakers in most cases.
Yes, I have it for my waking me up now and putting my coffee pot
nice.
On.
Isn't that great? Don't you love it?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is science fiction come true. The ability to talk to your, in effect, is talking to your house because you don't, you know, you're talking to the Echo, but it's just there. It's ambient and you can be anywhere in the room and talk to it and it'll, you know, it's dumb. It's not Scarlett Johansson and her yet, but it's getting there. I feel in a few years we'll be able to have, you know, more elaborate conversations with these. So Google has the same thing. Google's Assistant or Google Home is a little different than Amazon. First of all, Amazon's connected to Amazon services like the Audible books, which I really like, the Amazon shopping, which I use all the time. But Google is better at answering facts because Google is a search company. So if you want to know how tall the Empire State Building is, actually both will work. But if you get more obscure facts, Google gets better at it. So there are some differences. And Google, you can shop with Google, but you'll be using Walmart and Target and other stores that Google has relationships with.
I think my kids made the smart decision.
Oh, they did. Right? I tell people get the Amazon. And for the time being, Amazon has been out for 3 years. It's the winner. Google may catch up, but not yet.
Okay. I appreciate your help. I'm gonna go and tune in now and see if I can sit by my pool and watch my Bucks lose.
What a great life you have. That's awesome.
Oh.
Aaron, enjoy.
Okay, thank you, Leo.
Take care.
Happy holiday.
Happy holiday. Nice to talk to you. I'm really, you know, I've talked about these voice devices all the time. I think of all the incredible inventions that we've had in the last couple of years, this is the one that has the most promise because it combines a couple of different things. First of all, it's a new user interface to computing, right? There's no mouse. There's no keyboard. There's not even a screen on most of them. There's just your voice, and it talks back to you. And I think that's exciting. I think that is, you know, probably the next big thing in user interface. It also combines something that is improving rapidly, still is in the infancy of artificial intelligence. It's barely intelligence. You probably wouldn't even categorize it as intelligence. Artificial stupidity right now. But there's no doubt in my mind, Google especially, is making advances in this area. And I don't think it'll be too long before you can combine those two and you will have an assistant you can talk to that understands or at least seems like it understands what you're asking for. And even if it's just right now, just shopping, listening to podcasts, playing music, doing timers, setting timers for your cooking, that's really useful already. And it's only going to get better. Right now, the clear leader is Amazon, and my house is full of Amazon Echo devices. As is my office, actually. But I do have the Google Home devices, and I think more and more you're going to see those. Right now, it's become a real competitive environment, hasn't it? Google's offering its Google Home Mini, its least expensive home, for, I think, $30 with a $10 coupon. And the Amazon Echo Dot, I think, is down to $30 or $40, too. So they're getting there where they want to get in your house. And they know once you develop a relationship, once you bond to one of these systems, you're going to end up, in all likelihood, you know, sticking with it. So everybody's trying to get you right now. It's a good opportunity for you to try these out. Chris Marquardt from discoverthetopfloor.com, our photo expert, joins us to talk supermoon right after this. Chris Marquardt is here, our photo guy. He joins us every week. And of course, this week we need him. We need you, photo guy, because the super moon is here. The super moon is here. Hello, Chris.
Is it how super is it? That's the big question. Do you want me to,
so Chris said, look at the astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson's posts on all of this. And to put it in perspective, Tyson says, the very concept of a super moon is an embarrassment to everything else we call super, supernova, super collider, Superman, Super Mario Brothers. If last month's full moon were a 16.0-inch pizza, then this month's supermoon would be 16.1 inches. I'm just saying. If a 16.1-inch pizza is super to you compared with a 16.0-inch pizza, then we have an issue of vocabulary. Come on, Neil. We like it. It's 1% brighter than last month. It's a little bit bigger. And I want to go out and take a picture of it. Chris is going to help us.
It's cool. I mean, at least it gives you a good reason to go out and take pictures of the moon, right?
Yeah.
So that's what's most important about it. Today here in Germany, it's really cold, so I'd rather not go outside. But hey, if you have a nice big down jacket, it should be just fine. Now, there are three things about the moon. When you want to take pictures of the moon, and it doesn't matter if it's a super moon or not, doesn't really matter. Those three things are, first of all, it's tiny, so you have to do something about that. The second one is it's really bright. And third, it's, well, let's say kind of boring. So we'll talk about all of these three. It is tiny. Again, Neil deGrasse Tyson says you can see it through a straw. So hold a straw in front of your eyes, look at the moon. It's really big, small up in the sky. It's not very big. So your smartphone is not going to cut it. I mean, let's face it. You can digitally zoom in, but most smartphones will just, it won't look as awesome as you could get it with, let's say, a bigger camera. And especially one with a longer lens on it, a telephoto lens. We're talking 1,000 millimeters on a Micro Four Thirds camera. No. Then you will get a decently sized moon in there. If you have a bigger sensor, like a DSLR with a full-frame sensor, for example, then, well, I'd say 1,500 probably or more. That's what you want to use.
And those are really expensive, rare lenses. You don't see those.
Well, I think when the moment we cross 1,000 millimeters, I think the term changes from telephoto to telescope.
Yeah.
So if you have a telescope at home,
you just need
an adapter to hook up your camera. Yeah. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the moon is bright. The moon is very bright. It has a very bright surface. The sun shines directly on it. So the light that comes back is, well, it's not quite as bright as the sun, but it is really bright, brighter than you might think. It's even possible to shoot the moon handheld most of the time without a tripod, even with the long lens.
Because you can really, you can have a very fast shutter speed because it's so bright.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So for those of you, the automatic settings, the aperture priority or P mode on the camera, program mode, is going to have difficulties because the moon is so tiny. The light meter in the camera has a hard time finding that, mm-hmm. and it's going to get it wrong probably. So that's when you want to shoot manual. Here's a term that everyone who really wants to get into this should Google. It's called the Looney 11. Looney and then the number 11. It's a rule that helps you set up your camera in manual mode for exposure to capture the moon with decent detail. It's not going to be blown out. And just in short, it is, if you have your camera set to, let's say, ISO 100, yes, you can shoot it at ISO 100, which is normally used for daylight. You will set the shutter speed at an inverse of that. So shutter speed for ISO 100 would be 1/100th of a second.
Or 125. Then, most cameras do 125, right? That would be okay.
Or 125, yeah. or ISO 200 to 200th of a second,
okay.
And so on.
Okay.
And the aperture for that to get the full moon.
Let me guess.
Well exposed,
Looney 11, would it be 11?
Yeah, right. So
okay. So I'm going to shoot. I'm going to shoot 200 shutter speed, 1/200th of a second shutter speed, ISO 200, and f-stop will be 11. And by the way, many camera apps will let you set this as well in a manual.
You can try this if you have an app that lets you do that.
Yeah. And at that speed, you can handhold it.
Oh, you can handle it. I mean, if you have a 1,000 millimeter lens, you might want to go to 1/1000th of a second. You need a shorter shutter speed, but then just crank up the ISO to 1,000 and you're all set again.
Now,
so it's doable.
We just were looking at the astronomy photo of the day. This is something NASA does every day. And this time it's a repeat, something they've posted before of previous supermoons. It's a video of the moon, and it looks huge coming up, and you see people in silhouette or trees in silhouette. It makes the moon look gigantic. How do they do that? Is that a composite where they mix a big moon with little people?
No, it's not a composite. This is a really long lens. What they use in this really big moon is probably, my guess would be, something around 2,000 millimeters, a telescope, 2,000, maybe even more.
But then they have to be really far from the people, right? Is that the idea?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And that's what brings me to number three. The moon, just the moon itself on a photo, we've seen a gazillion of those. So that is not a really interesting photo. But the moment you spice it up with something like a silhouette in front of it, then you're golden. Well, this one, I'm seeing it right now on your screen. Okay, that's not 2,000. That's maybe 1,500 or 1,000. But
okay, it's big, though.
Still,
the moon is going to fill up maybe half the screen. And you can see the people. But so the people are distant as well.
They are distant. And of course, as a photographer, you have to be at exactly the right spot to get this kind of shot. Because if you are just, a few feet to the left or to the right, you won't get the people in front of the moon. So there are tools that will help you set up this kind of a shot.
You need to know where the path of the moon is going to be even before it comes up. So you could set up your tripod, set up your lens, make sure everything's set correctly. Do you recommend, I think you did in the past, a program called TPE, the Photographer's Ephemeris. Is that what you
There's
use?
There's one called TPE. Yep, that's one that I use, and I think it's on all mobile platforms. Then there is one that is also pretty good. It's called Sun Surveyor. Check that one out. And the third one that does something very similar is called Photo Pills, P-I-L-L-S, Photo Pills. Those are the three, TPE, Photo Pills, and Sun Surveyor, that I would recommend to find out in advance what direction the moon is going to be, or the sun, if you need the sun in the shot.
And do it now, because it takes you a while to figure out how to use these things.
Oh, they're, these are
very strange. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but you know what? If you can get a video like this astronomy photo of the day, you'll be very happy. I mean, This is remarkable.
That's
beautiful.
Amazing, yes.
Yeah. And this took more. It's more about the setup and understanding what's going to happen than anything else. It's too late. By the time you see the moon, it's too late.
True.
Well, that's fun. So the Looney 11 set the ISO to 200, or you know, you could even set it higher if you want a higher frame rate. So if you set it to ISO 200, the frame rate would be 1/200th of a second, inverse, 1 over 200, at F11. And because the brightness of the moon doesn't change that much.
Well, it does a bit, but that if F11 is a starting point, so you can vary up and down.
Now, if you're doing a video, you really can't do a test shot. But if you're just doing a still, of course, you can test it and look at it and try it again and make it a little darker, make it a little bit brighter or whatever.
True.
Very cool. This image is great, but of course it's on the astronomy photo of the day. That's why we know it's great. Chris Marquardt, you'll find him at discoverthetopfloor.com. Very nice. Very nice. I love this image, I have to say. That just nailed it. You think a thousandth would have been enough to get that, huh?
1,000, 1,500, something along those lines, yeah. Well, this entirely depends on the sensor size they use. If they have a full frame, that's what they will need. If they shot that on a Micro Four Thirds, you don't need as long a focal length.
Mark G did it. And you said there's a link to the...
Somewhere says detailed planning.
Detailed, the moon rise, supermoon. Detailed planning. Here's a link, detailed planning, full moon silhouettes. Yeah, that's a lot of work. A lot of work. Shot with Canon,
I can see it. It's
1D.
It's a 1D. That's a full frame. Yeah, well,
a 500 millimeter lens.
Well, and a Canon
extender. So it's 1,000.
So it's 1,000.
So I have a 200 with an extender. So that's still not going to be long enough.
Oh, and it's a slight crop. The camera has a slight crop, so it's an equivalent of 1,300. That's what it says. So it wasn't too far off.
Wow.
Yep, that is. That's definitely brilliant.
Beautiful.
But he must have used these kind of tools to help him plan that out.
Yeah, the ephemeris. There's a website that's free. The programs are not free.
The programs are not free, but if you do these kind of shots, another interesting one, for example, is called Manhattan Hinge, where in Manhattan, every now and then, the sun lines up exactly on the east-west grid.
Oh, yeah, love
so
that.
So the sun comes up at the end of this tunnel almost, and photographers will meet up there. So Google Manhattan Hinge, that's going to yield some interesting stuff, and these are the exact same tools that are going to be used for that.
I think you can use the photographer's ephemeris on the web as well for free. So this, I'll put a link to this in our show notes. Let me put that in the chat room so that people can get it. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Always fun. Have a great week. Are you're going to stay inside on a cold German night?
Yeah, and I'll be here for two more weeks, and then I'll be gone for 2 weeks. So we'll need to find
another traveling man. Oh, you're going away for Christmas, though.
I'm just going away for...
We're gone as well. I think we don't do shows on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, so if...
That's fine with me. I'll actually be on the Chaos Computer Congress again.
Oh, fun. They do that at Christmas, huh?
They do this between Christmas and New Year's.
Perfect.
4 days.
What fun. I'll be in the British Virgin Islands.
That sounds like fun,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm. Nice and warm. All right, Chris. Thanks.
All right. Have enjoy. Talk to you again next week.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Our show today brought to you by our fine sponsor. And if you're a creative type, if you make videos or you have a blog or you do podcasting, you ought to know about video blocks from Storyblocks. You probably know about the idea of stock photography, stock video clips or After Effects projects, things like that. That can be very expensive. In fact, we've used systems that cost us, you know, hundreds of dollars a month. But this is a great source of stuff, imagery, footage. In fact, you watch a TV show or a movie these days, chances are some or if not much of that movie or TV show wasn't shot by the director, the filmmaker, but was stock footage that they included. You see a shot of the city from a helicopter. They're not going to rent a helicopter when they can get it from Videoblocks, right? The best thing about Videoblocks is how affordable it is. Videoblocks has 150,000 videos. 100,000 audio clips, 400,000 images. They've got After Effects templates. They've got motion backgrounds. They've got a ton of stuff to spice up your film, your podcast, your blog. And they don't cost hundreds of dollars a month. Listen to the price. Flat rate pricing. Use as much as you want. Royalty free. Once you download it, it's yours forever for personal or commercial use. $149 a year. A year. What? This saves us so much money. And now I can tell Anthony or other editors, use as much as you want. It doesn't cost us any more. You get even more. All the content's royalty-free. Doesn't matter, commercial or personal projects. It's yours to keep forever. There's always new content. But even better, once you're a member for $149 a year, you get full access to their marketplace. And I love the marketplace because this is where creators can go to sell their clips directly to you. There's 5 million clips there and more all the time. They pocket all the money, but you, because you're a member, you get big discounts. So, let me recap. $149 a year, 150,000 videos, 100,000 audio clips, 400,000 images, After Effects templates, discounts on the marketplace of 5 million clips. $149 a year. It's a no-brainer. 90,000 customers include NBC, National Geographic, the History Channel, the Travel Channel. You'll see Video Blocks content everywhere. It's great stuff, super high quality. Go to videoblocks.com/techguy to sign up. That way they know you heard it here. Videoblocks.com/techguy. There's a lot of people can use this. I mean, you can spice up anything, you dress up, even like, you know, making a wedding video or a family photo album. It's just, you know, we went to Monte Carlo, but we didn't get pictures of the casino. Don't worry, you go to Video Blocks. There it is. It's not cheating. Video, especially at $149 a year, videoblocks.com/techguy to save on millions of studio quality stock media from Video Blocks. We thank Video Blocks by Storyblocks for making the Tech Guy podcast possible. Leo Laporte, Tech Guy. I'll put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com to a web-based free version of the photographer's ephemeris if you want to play with it. It takes a, you know, if you're planning on taking a picture of the full moon tonight and you want to know where it's going to be in the sky so you can set up ahead of time, play with this now because it takes a while to figure it out. The photographer's ephemeris. You can also Google it, but they have a web version as well as apps. And as Chris says, if you do this a lot, you might want to buy the app. It's not very expensive. And it's very handy to have on your phone because then you have it out there with you. Back to our phones we go. Lee from Big Bear, California is next. Hi, Lee.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, good, good. Hey, I'm one of those lucky guys whose brother bought him an iPhone 7 earlier in the year.
Uh-huh.
And ever since then, I can't figure out if there's some sort of setting I can put to notify me whenever a call was made, but I wasn't around near my phone when the call came in.
Yeah. I mean, it does kind of do that with a little number on the phone icon. You've probably noticed that. A little on the left, the green phone icon, there's a little red badge that shows how many calls came in.
Right.
And then if you tap the phone icon, you'll get recents, but if you up at the top, there's a tab that says missed, and that'll give you a list of all your missed calls.
Right, but I want some sort of audible alert.
When would that go off? I mean, you want just to keep pinging you until you say something?
Well, or till I pick up realize that I had a call come in.
Yeah,
because you know my brother called me a few days ago at 5 o'clock and I didn't realize he called until I turned my phone off at 10.
Yeah, so you want the phone to kind of holler at you and say, hey, right, buddy, you missed a phone call.
Yeah, like my old cell phones used to do.
Yeah. Probably I have to think. I think you could do this with a site that's hideously useful called If This Then That. IFTTT.com. It's a free site. And it lets you create scripts. So one of the things you could do is you could have a script. You know, with Android, it's really easy because they actually have an Android interface. So you could have a simple script that would say, just bug me. With iOS, a little bit more tricky because Apple does not give people who use iOS and apps in iOS quite as much leeway. But I think you could have the if this then that app let you know. I'll have to look at it and see.
IFTTT.com.
And it's a good thing to know about. To make it really useful, though, you'll want to put the IFTTT app on your phone, as well as you can visit the website and make the recipe there. It's probably easier with a full screen and a keyboard. But you could certainly do it on your phone. And you need the app on your phone to do the alert, because that's what's going to do the alert. So I have it, for instance, set up so that it alerts me when somebody tweets me a direct message. You can hook it up with that. I have to see if it would have, if there's a way. With Android, this is easy.
Yeah, because what I did was I actually even called Apple and explain to them, and they said, "Man, that's a great idea." But as far as they know, they don't have anything like.
Yeah, they're not real good on referring to third party tools. Yeah. They know what they do. It may be that it's not possible to do it with Apple, only because Apple is so restrictive about what apps can do. For instance, I don't know if an app can see that there was a call. I'm trying to think. So what you'd like is for the phone to put up a notification, and you can set it so the notification
audible one.
Yeah, you can set it so the notification has an audible tone. In fact, you can have it give it a distinct tone that you know. Oh, that means I have a missed call.
Yeah,
I don't know why Apple doesn't do those notifications, come to think of it.
I'm not one of those people that have a cell phone glued to my side of my head.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, you could pick up the phone, but if you didn't know that you were going to get a call and you didn't want to miss the call, having the phone go, you got a call.
Exactly, yeah.
Would be great.
That would come handy.
Look, episode 1168, I already answered this question. That just shows you I'm forgetting everything. How do I set an audio alert for missed calls on iPhone? And let's see what I said. they say actually the iPhone can do it. You can set a notification if you go into settings, and in settings, there's a notifications, and then in the notifications, there's a phone. Well, I'm going to have to look at this now on my iPhone. So Apple should have known this one.
Yeah, but they told me the only ones they have are visual ones, not audible.
Well, let me go see here. So notifications, and I'm going to go look at phone notifications. And you're using iOS 11, I'm going to guess.
The latest one.
Good man. Although I have so many friends who said, don't do iOS 11. It's terrible.
Well, the only reason I don't like it is because it tries to force you into signing up for iTunes, and then the one I did yesterday for Apple Pay, and I know
that's the new Apple Pay. They just pushed that out.
Just to have a phone. You know?
I know. You know how it is with Apple. So I see. I can set a notification, allow notifications for phone. I can have a sound. That's the default sound, but I could make it something more noticeable or distinct.
Yeah.
Like that. But now, when is this notification going to happen? That's the question. I don't know. That may be one of the issues. I would at least do this. Go into the settings. Pick a sound that you'll say, is unique. Something like this. Oh, you must have gotten a call. And let's see.
Yeah, I don't care what the sound is, just as long as there's a sound.
If you make it distinct, then you'll know, that means a missed call.
Right, right.
Now, so there is definitely a notification setting for phone. What Apple doesn't tell me is, what is it notifying me about? I'm going to presume it's notifying me about missed calls. So that would be the first thing to do, and just see what happens. See if it pops up a notification that you've missed a call. It's funny. I don't really. It's so unclear about what happens here. I don't know. But then the second choice might be if this then that. It does look like though if you turn on alerts on notifications from the phone, that you will get notifications at least when you've missed a call. Now, will you see it again? I don't know. If you make it persistent, then it will at least be on the screen no matter what.
Okay.
and until you dismiss it.
You all monkey around with it.
Yeah. I think it's must be off by default. Otherwise, you would have noticed that.
Yeah, exactly.
You missed a call. And if that doesn't work, take a look at if this, then that. I think you'll find it useful for other things as well.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah, the problem you have when you get on iPhone or any Apple device is you're really limited to what Apple thinks you can want to do. And in general, Apple doesn't like, and I understand their thinking, their motivation. And they want to make it more secure, so they don't let third-party apps, non-Apple apps, have access to things like the phone app. So I don't think if this then that can say monitor the phone app and see if, oh, a call came in and then give you a trigger. I mean, if this then that will do things like email you. You know, you could have it set up, send me an email if I miss a call. You can do that on Android. They do allow that on Android, but they don't, as far as I can tell, it doesn't look like they do it on iPhone. And that doesn't surprise me because Apple doesn't want third-party apps accessing that kind of information. They want to put everything in its own silo to protect you, but it makes it a little less convenient. Let's see. I have time, I think, for another quick call here. Who's next on the line? It would look to be Mark in Singapore. Hello, Mark.
Hi.
Thanks for hanging on.
You hear me?
Yeah, I hear you great.
Thanks
for listening in Singapore.
Yeah, I've been listening for a year. Just found your podcast on TuneIn about a year ago, and
I've been
a regular listener since then.
Wonderful.
16 time zones ahead of Pacific time, so you can guess what time I have here.
Wait a minute. It's like the middle of the night? What is it? I don't even know.
It's 0500.
5 a.m. Holy cow.
5 a.m.
Well, thanks for getting up early with us. I appreciate it.
No,
by the way, I love Singapore. Beautiful, beautiful island. Wonderful food. The people are great. The climate is perfect.
Come visit us more often.
I will. I haven't been there in years, and I really enjoy it. What can I do for you?
I've been to... I just want to say I was at Napa Valley and Cinco de Mayo having lunch with a friend there, and then we drove back to Rio Vista, spent the night, and then left.
I'm sorry we missed you. You were just up the road.
We would have dropped by your studio had we at the time.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, but at least we get to talk on the phone. Hey, I do have to take a break for the top of the hour. Hang on. I will talk to you during the news, and then I can relay the answer when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sorry about that, Mark. I had to take, timing was bad.
No problem.
But you said you have it. So first of all, you're a photographer.
Yes. I have a question on high-end DSLR cameras, and specifically the full-format Canon and Nikons.
Yes.
My question is, why aren't there any models that have the fully tiltable display screens at the back? Someone told me that it's because it's too fragile for the pro to use, and I can't believe that they can't engineer something robust.
You know, that's a really interesting question. You're right. My 5D Mark IV does not. I don't think the 1DX does. I love a swivelable screen. My Sony A9 does, which means I can hold it over my head and shoot down and see what I'm shooting.
Yeah.
I can hold it at my waist, kind of Rolleiflex style. And
you know, especially if you want to go into a village with all the kids running around, the moment you hold up your camera and everything changes. It's a different shot, you know.
Exactly.
If you shoot from the hip with your tiltable screen,
I love it.
Framing a shot, then you get a really nice natural pictures of the kids and the villagers and all that.
Ironically, both Canon and Nikon offer tiltable, movable screens on their lower end cameras.
Yeah, but I want one on the full format prosumer models.
Well, what's encouraging, I'm seeing a report from Canon Rumors that Canon has patented a very large swivelable display for a 1DX style mirrored camera. They don't offer it yet, but they've got the patent on it, which might indicate they're thinking it. Canon Rumors says a lot of us have called on Canon to put a very angle LCD on professional cameras like the 1DX or 5D or 7D. We're still waiting. I don't think there's a technical reason they couldn't. You're right. They probably pros are saying, oh, well, I'm a pro. I don't need that.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't need that.
It's a macho thing.
Now, the D850, which is a very, very good full frame. Let me see. Somebody's telling me that that does have a swivelable back. Let's see if that's the case. This is a very nice camera, and if Nikon does it on this camera, then it will be coming, because that, you know, that just shows you that they've decided there's a market. Yeah, it does. Look at that. Tilt and touch LCD screen. This is the D850, which has a very nice Sony sensor in it. It's a full frame, you bet.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's the one.
Okay.
It's $3,299, but that 850 is very, very nice. You know, I think maybe one of the reasons is because they see this as a video camera as well as a still camera. And, of course, if you're a videographer, it's very important that you have a tilt viewfinder. So
yeah.
That may
yeah,
be
exactly.
why
yep.
why they do that. And also, touch to focus is really great, and I have that on my 5D Mark IV. I think that may be coming.
That's really
so
useful.
This is the D850, fantastic camera. Highly recommend it. It's not the 1DX, but it's 45 megapixels. It's a very nice full frame camera. So that's a Nikon.
One more question if I have time.
Sure.
DSLR cameras versus mirrorless digital cameras, the new thing.
Yeah.
Any future in that?
Both. I think most of the photographers I talk to, even those who still use mirror cameras with mirrors like the Nikon and the Canon, feel like Nikon and Canon are being old and stodgy. And by not adapting mirrorless, they're giving it up to Panasonic and, most importantly, Sony. My primary camera, I have a 5D Mark IV, which I really, really like, but the size of it, because of the mirror, the complexity of it, and most importantly, the speed of it is hampered by having a mirror in there. You have to pull the mirror out of the way. And the A9, which is the mirrorless I shoot, this top-of-the-line Sony, can shoot, you know, 20 frames a second because there's no mirror to pull out of the way. And so I think the future is mirrorless. I really do. And people like Trey Ratcliffe, now, it was a good friend. He moved to Sony. I have to say, Trey is a landscape photographer. So for people who are shooting, my friend Scott Bourne, who's a bird photographer, he shoots believe it or not, the mirrorless Micro Four Thirds Olympus OMD, but he prefers that as well. For people who need to get the shot fast, need fast focus, fast shooting, mirrorless is the future. It's also lighter. Scott had to go to it because his orthopedist said you can't carry a full-frame camera anymore, mirror camera anymore, because your shoulder's going to give out. So Scott had to find a lighter system, and he loves the OMD.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the Sony A9, and it does have a swivel.
I'm leaning very much to the Sony cameras.
Yeah,
now.
They'll look at the A7R III just came out. That's a stunning camera. And they have swivels.
That's the one that I was looking at.
Beautiful. Yeah. Highly recommend it. Highly recommend.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
And what's happening, the reason pros wanted a mirror because they wanted the best optical quality through the viewfinder, right? So you're seeing what the lens is seeing. But the video taps have gotten so good in these Sonys using OLED screens, very high resolution screens, very fast, they are, I would say, as good as through the lens. And because it is video, they can superimpose all sorts of information about the photo that you can't get in a mirror.
Yeah.
So, it's a debate. There's still a lot of photographers. In fact, Anthony Tortorello, who's in our chat room, is a pro wildlife photographer in Hawaii. He says, no, you got to have mirrors.
Okay.
So I don't know. I have both. I use both. I'm very happy with both.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the call.
To the R3. Yeah.
I think the R3 is an amazing camera. That is an amazing camera. Sony is just kicking. And the other thing that's different is Sony's putting more smarts in their cameras than Nikon and Canon are. That's where Nikon and Canon are really falling behind. They are not putting the computational stuff in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Insurgent. I'll go with the Insurgent.
Good. Be the Insurgent. Be the Rebel, Mark.
Yep.
Great to talk to you. I hope I'll see you next time. Either you're out here or I'm out there. Have a great day.
Good a bit now.
All right. Take care, Mark.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Anthony. The Sony's a little lighter, although by the time they put you the lenses on, it's not nearly as light. And, by the way, they don't have the range of high-quality lenses that Canon and Nikon do. It's faster in terms of frame rate and focusing. It shoots silent, which is pretty cool. I mean, if silent shooting is what you want, there's an advantage there, too. I love, you know, all my Galapagos pictures were with 5D, and I think it's fantastic. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that technology that's pervading our lives. We could talk about shopping for technology. I know the holidays are coming. Many of you are going to be shopping out there. We can talk about using the stuff you've already got. My phone number, 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. We just got a call from Singapore. Mark was using his Skype out, and you can use that too. Still toll free. 8888-ASK-LEO. And we do have a website that I put everything that we talk about in the show. James DeRuvo puts it all there. Everything I say, he writes it down as we're talking. So if you go to techguylabs.com, it's free. There's no sign up. There's no subscription. I don't want your email address. Everything from the show. This is episode 1445. We put the audio from the show and the video up afterwards. You can go drill right down because we divide each show into hours, each hour into segments. So you can drill right down to a particular call, hear what I said, see what comments people left because there's a comment section as well. And it's searchable. So it's, I think, a very useful tool. And I can even find answers to questions I forgot the answer to by going there. TechGuyLabs.com, as we did last hour. So I talked to Mark from Singapore a little bit. He is in the market for a new high-end camera. And he asked really two interesting questions. One, why the big boys, Canon and Nikon, with their high-end digital single lens reflex, you know, the interchangeable lens cameras, the ones that cost $4,000, $5,000, $10,000, why they don't put articulated LCDs on the back so you can hold it over your head and tilt the LCD down, or hold it at your waist and tilt the LCD up. And I think that that's partly because they assume they are through the lens viewing. You know, when you use a viewfinder on a mirror-based DSLR, you're looking optically, that's what the mirror does, through the lens. You're seeing exactly what the lens is seeing. So the presumption is somebody buys a very expensive, fancy camera like that, they're going to want to look through the viewfinder. They're not going to use the LCD. Canon, Nikon, everybody else, when they make point-and-shoots, consumer-grade cameras, some of them don't even have viewfinders. You use the LCD. And this is kind of what's happening in photography, is that these big, expensive cameras that have been the bastion of the pros and have served pros are clearly being influenced by what's happening at the other end and by other companies. And Mark called them the insurgents of Sony and Panasonic, who are making amazing cameras that are competing directly with the big boys, Canon and Nikon. Well, the chat room pointed out that Nikon has made, for the very first time, a high-end digital SLR camera with an articulated LCD screen on the back. It's the Nikon D850. It's a $3,000 camera without a lens. You still have to buy the lens. And it does have a tiltable screen. Maybe because, they're acknowledging people still do use that screen from time to time to frame a photo. Maybe because it's also a great video camera, and they know videographers very well, you know, don't want to look through the viewfinder. That's a hard thing to do when you're doing video. I would guess it's that. And if Nikon's doing it with their high-end D850, then you figure Canon's probably going to do the same. In fact, I noted they have a patent for a really big LCD that I presume they'll put on their DSLRs. But all the mirrorless cameras offer articulated LCDs, the Sonys, the Olympus, the Panasonics, and I think they're great. I just like the flexibility. Most of the time I'll use the viewfinder, but I like the flexibility of using that LCD. I think the assumption is if you buy a DSLR with a mirror in it, the mirror is there because you want to use the viewfinder. He also wanted to know what my opinion, mirrorless versus mirror, because mirror is the old school, you know, the Nikon 1DX and the 5D or that's the Canon or the Nikon D1. These are very expensive, very big, very heavy cameras that the pros use. You watch a football game, you look down the sidelines. Of course, they all have those big, heavy cameras. But increasingly, many of the photographers I know are moving to a mirrorless format because the camera body is smaller. It's less complex mechanically. The difference is instead of looking optically through the lens using a prism, you're looking through the viewfinder at a video screen. And there's a little video camera in the body of the camera shooting through the lens. And so what you're seeing is a video of what the lens is seeing instead of optically what the lens, you know, actually looking through the lens. And for a long time, that was a second-rate way to do it. But Sony especially started making these screens. They're using OLED. These screens are so good, so high resolution, so fast. The frame rates are so fast. And there's so much more information they can put on that screen. A lot of photographers have said, oh, you know, maybe that's not so bad. Maybe that video tap isn't so bad compared to an optical view. So I like mirrorless. I shoot both. I have a Sony A9 my wife very generously gave me for a birthday present. And it's an amazing camera. And because it doesn't have to move a big, heavy mirror out of the way, it's silent. It's no click. You can turn off the click, which is very useful in some situations. And it's fast. It could take, I think it can go as fast as 20 frames in 1 second. Really fast, very high quality frames, a very high quality camera. So at this point, I don't know if there's a consensus. Professionals, some, you know, like Anthony Tortoriello in our chat room, who's a professional wildlife photographer in Hawaii, he says, I tried those mirrorless. I went back to the mirrored Nikons. I liked my Nikon. And then I know other photographers like my friend Trey Ratcliffe, who's a very well-known landscape photographer, who really was one of the first to abandon the Canon cameras with mirrors and go to the new high-tech mirrorless cameras. And he loves them, the Sonys. He loves them. It's really the battle we see everywhere between the old-school mechanical guys and the new-school digital folks. And digital's going to win in the long run. Of course it is. It wins everywhere else. Why wouldn't it win here? It just takes a while to get better and better and better. And at some point, there'll be it'll just flip and everybody will say, yeah, digital's better. And I think we're starting to get to that point because of something called computational photography. Have you heard that phrase? You see it. If you're using a camera phone, you're seeing it in action. The lenses on the camera phones are tiny. They're smaller than your pinky fingernail. They're teensy weensy. But they get amazing images, not because the lens is so good. The lens is terrible. But what they do with the image, with the data afterwards, computationally, they have very, very fast processors. In fact, the new Google Pixel 2 XL has a dedicated camera processor. It has a chip just for the camera, a microprocessor just for the camera that does some amazing things. It takes what is really a terrible photo. If you saw the photo unprocessed, you'd say, that's awful, and turns it into something that's very good. I think you could argue the Pixel 2 XL is the best camera phone on the market right now, even though it only has one lens. It's doing what the iPhone and the Galaxy Note do with two lenses. It's doing it with one lens and some special pixels and a lot of software. That's computational photography, and that's only going to get better. For a long time, Canon and Nikon said, no, 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 no. We're going to give you the pure image. You know, we're not going to mess with it. You want all the data. We're not going to mess with it. Maybe we'll put a bare filter in or something like that, but we're not going to mess with it. And now I think they're starting to say, we're getting lapped by these digital folks and their fast processors. The lenses don't matter as much as they used to. All the work's being done by the computational engine. 8888 Ask Leo, the website, techguylabs.com. We're going to go back to the phones. Our next call comes to us from beautiful Rancho Mirage, California. Barb's on the line. She wants to give away her iPad and wants a little help in wiping the data. We'll help you do that, Barb, in just a second. Right after these words from our fine sponsors, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We were talking about the Tracker earlier today. The Tracker is the lightest, it's about the size of a dime, smallest, most effective Bluetooth tracker solution out there. They've been doing it for longer than anybody else. That's why 8 years ago, Tracker changed everything when they released their first tracking device. Now they've done it again. Last year, we're talking about the Tracker Bravo. They still sell that beautiful anodized aluminum, size of a quarter, weighs almost nothing. But they've even done better with the new Tracker Pixel, size of a dime, weighs even less, and it has LEDs all around it. What you do is you set up the Tracker, you pair it with the Tracker software on your phone. And if you get separated from, I put the Tracker on my keys, but you could put it on anything. Briefcase, you actually put it on everything. Briefcase, bicycle, luggage, purse, keys, whatever you lose, right? I lose my keys all the time. Whenever you leave the room with your phone in your pocket, but the keys are behind, the phone goes, hey, it makes a sound. So you left the keys. Whenever you leave your phone in the room, this is the two-way separation alert, the keys will moan at you. There's even a button on the Tracker that you press and your phone goes, ah, even if it's silenced. So it's very convenient just for that quick thing so you don't leave stuff behind. But let's say you do leave. Let's say you're at the beach and the keys fall out of your pocket. They're in the sand. You walk back to the car. Oh, I don't have my keys. What do? You launch the Tracker app on your phone and you get a map. You get a map that says this is where I saw him last. Oh, that's amazing. You go and you find him. Ah, worst scenario. Somebody, some good Samaritan, sees your keys in the sand, picks them up, puts them in his pocket, takes them home. Well, now what do? Because Bluetooth only goes about 150 feet, right? You could say, the Tracker will say, well, I saw them last here, but they're not here anymore. This is where the amazing Tracker Crowd Locate Network comes into effect. It's the largest in the world. 5 million people have trackers. So 5 million trackers out there. Anybody running the software, when they walk, you turn on notifications on your phone, you say, let me know if anybody sees my keys. It notifies you. It says, oh, your keys, we just saw them on 3rd Street. It's amazing. And Tracker's 30-day money-back guarantee means you have nothing to lose. Look, if you're given for the holidays, you're given losable items, put a few trackers in the stockings. I'm telling you, it's the lightest, best Bluetooth device on the market. And unlike many of the others, when the battery runs out after a year, it's Bluetooth LE. It's very efficient. You take it out, put in a new one. Yeah, you don't throw it out. You keep it going. The Tracker makes a great gift. And during this holiday season, we got you 20% off any order. Just go to thetracker.com/techguy. T-H-E-T-R-A-C-K-R. No E at the end there. TheTracker.com/techguy, 20% off. These are amazing. You should get dozens of them. Put them everywhere. Put them in everything. I'm tired of searching for stuff. TheTracker.com/techguy, 20% off. TheTracker.com/techguy. Be a great holiday season. If everybody in your family gets a Tracker and you stop going, where are my keys? Have you seen my hat? I put in my hat band. That's another one I lose. Everywhere. In my briefcase. Put it on your phone. Put it in your wallet. TheTracker.com/techguy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I got the hippie shake. Barb in Rancho Mirage, California. Hi, Barb.
Hello. How are you?
Aloha. I'm great. How are you?
Good. Good, good.
So you want to give away your iPad?
Well, it went to my granddaughter.
Aren't you sweet? That is a nice thing to do. Are you going to get yourself a new one?
Yes.
So it's a win-win.
And I have so much stuff on mine.
Oh, yeah.
She could care less about it. And she has a few of her things on mine.
Oh, you want to clean it off. This is true of any computer, whether it's a desktop, a laptop, a tablet. Before you sell it, before you give it away, you need to wipe it.
Well, not only that, my big concern is how do I put what I have on mine now on the new one?
Right. So the first thing you're going to do you have a computer, a desktop computer?
Yes.
It's easier.
I have a laptop.
You can do it with iCloud, but it's slow. I like to do it with a desktop computer. So you're going to connect your iPad.
Did you say it's slower on a laptop?
No. It's slower on iCloud going through the Wi-Fi. It's better to do it with a wire. So you're going to get you have that lightning cable you charge your phone with. You plug that other end of that into the computer. You need to have iTunes on the computer. Do you have iTunes?
Mm, yes.
You can download it from Apple for free if you don't. As soon as you plug it in, run iTunes. If it doesn't run automatically, it probably will. But if it doesn't run it, and then there's one little thing you want to make sure you do. You look at the phone interface. Click the little. This drives me crazy. By the way, Apple has really screwed up iTunes. But when you plug in your iPad, there'll be no indication that you've plugged in your iPad, except there will be a little tiny iPad icon on the iTunes menu bar up there. So you tap that, and then you'll see, oh, yes, you're connected to your iPad. Here's the version, the latest software, blah, 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 blah. By the way, before you do this, you might, if you haven't updated to iOS 11.2, you might want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just so that you have the latest version on there for your granddaughter. So do that first, and then you already do, so you don't have to worry about that. And then you're going to see there is a section about backing up your iPad, and there's one box I want you to check, which is to encrypt the backup. And the reason you do that is it will back up everything on your iPad except passwords if you don't check that box. You want it to back up the passwords, too, because you don't want to re-enter all that stuff.
Okay.
So check that box. It'll say, oh, okay, well, we'll do that, but you got to give us a password so that no one else can access this data. So you give it a password.
Another password.
One more. And it's not your iCloud password. It's not your, you know, a numeric code to get into your iPad. You're right. It's a new one. You can reuse. It doesn't really matter. You can reuse if you want. Nobody else is going to have access to this unless they have access to your computer.
Okay.
So I use a kind of a normal low security password that's easy to remember. Use your granddaughter's initials and her birthday, something like that.
Yeah.
And that is just so that nobody can get that backup and then see all your passwords in it. So you're going to let it back up, and that will happen pretty quickly, 10 minutes maybe, or maybe less. Once that backup is done, you have a complete image copy of what's on that iPad right now.
I got you. Okay.
Then you go into the settings on the iPod, and you'll see that you can reset. You can erase everything, reset all the data. It will ask you, because Apple wants to be secure, this is to prevent theft. Before you can erase an iPad, it'll say, well, what's your iCloud password?
Okay.
That's to keep somebody from stealing it and reusing it.
Got you.
So you'll enter your password. It'll wipe it. Now that iPad is just like it came from the factory, except that it has 11.2, the most recent iOS on it. And you can give it to your granddaughter, and she'll set it up with a new – takes your fingerprint out, takes any data of yours that's out, and so forth. When you go to the store, you buy a new iPad, you take it home. And right at the beginning when you're setting it up, it'll say, do you want to restore an old iPad? And you say yes.
You're kidding. When I turn it on?
Yeah, you go through a couple of, hello, what language you want to use? Do you want to restore? And then you plug it into, it'll say, okay, plug it into iTunes. It'll even show on the screen. It says iTunes and a little cable. You plug it in. You choose the backup that you just made. You restore it. And your iPad, your new iPad, has everything on it your old one did. The only thing that is a pain is it will have to re-download any apps or music, any content. And the reason for that is they want to make sure they have the most recent apps. They don't want to restore the old version that's on the backup.
Are you talking my audiobooks, too?
Yes, you'll have to re-download those, too, I'm sorry to say. I know, that's a pain, isn't it? But that's the way they do it. It does back up, though, the list of apps you had. So it'll automatically reinstall all your old apps. It will back up your Wi-Fi settings, your passwords, if you've been saving passwords in Safari, it will back those up as well. You just have to re-download. Yeah, I know. Every time I set up a new phone or iPad, I have to download all those audiobooks again. And that's, by the way, that's a good reminder. Anything like your audiobooks, if you have an account, deactivate the old iPad before you erase it. Go into if you use Audible, for instance, go into the Audible app and log out, deactivate it, because they have a limit to the number of devices you can use. And you don't want, once you erase that iPad, you can never deactivate it. So it's always a good idea if you remember, you know, you have, Adobe products or whatever that have a limited number of installations, to deactivate the old installations before you wipe the iPad.
You know, I am really glad I can watch this again.
I know. It's complicated, isn't it? But James is writing this down. We'll have it on the show notes, techguylabs.com. And yes, you're right. We'll have audio and video. A couple hours after the show ends, we put the audio and video up. So, yeah. You can watch it, pause it, watch it again, pause
exactly.
it.
Exactly. I love it.
Hey, it's great to talk to you. Thank you.
I do watch you almost every weekend.
Oh, I appreciate it, Barb.
In fact, last weekend, the Giz guy.
The Giz Whiz.
he gave me that tip on getting the Echo Dot and plus the plug for $5 or something from Amazon.
Yeah.
What a deal. And
nice.
I jumped on it and
see?
I love it.
Isn't he great? I love Dickie D. I was in New York this week and I had lunch with him and it's just great to see Dick always. Yeah, he's a great guy. He's sweet. Yeah, he's a sweetheart. Hey, Barbas, you're a sweetheart too. And tell your granddaughter she should listen.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh good.
In fact, she usually tells me about it.
Yeah, she probably knows all this stuff.
Yeah.
Lovely to talk to you. Thank you, Barb. Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. On we go with Dave. He's listening in Ridgecrest, California. Hi, Dave.
Well, hello, Leo.
Hello.
Hey, you know the guy that had the one of the notifications up in Big Bear for his phone?
Yeah.
Well, that's why I keep my little old dumb phone.
I know. That's what the feature phones did, didn't they? They would beep you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would say, oh, you missed a call. You missed a light would come on. You missed a call. You missed a call.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just shows you how little we use smartphones as phones.
Yeah. But right now, my computer setup here is that I've got an old hand-me-down Mac downstairs, and I've got an old Hewlett-Packard Windows XP.
Oh, dear.
Upstairs, and
oh,
my
dear.
Son's got a whole bunch of new stuff in his room.
Yeah.
And downstairs, we're connected by Wi-Fi. When he gets on, I can. It's like I'm on DSL.
It slows you down? Yeah, because he's doing all his fancy stuff, and he's slowing you down.
I'm looking for a new router, I think.
Okay, hold on a sec. We got to take a little break here. That you're right. Yeah, we need to fix this. He shouldn't get all the bandwidth. You need some, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte. The tech guy ain't no mountain. We're taking calls, talking about tech at 8888 Ask Leon. I've got Dave right now on the line from Ridgecrest. And Dave's son has a computer downstairs. You have a computer upstairs, a Windows machine. He's got a Mac. You get online. As soon as your son gets online, it just clobbers your bandwidth.
Right.
Can't do anything. What's your son doing? Is he downloading movies or something? Is he watching Netflix?
I don't know. He's got a whole bunch of stuff in there. I don't even... I can't keep track of
kids today, I tell you. So, what kind of router are you using right now?
Well, right now we've got one of the Netgears. It's been in service probably 8 years.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, you need a new router. So there's two things that you could. Is it a cable or is it DSL? What kind of connection to the world?
DSL.
So there's a couple of things you can do. Sometimes the DSL router itself is funky and old, and you might be able to increase. And this would be worth a call to your carrier and just say, hey, can I get a new router? Would that improve the speed? If it's 8 years old, you probably do want to replace it. You're renting it from them. They should give you a new one.
No. The router...
I'm talking about the modem, the thing that's plugged into the wall.
Yeah,
and then in the
not quite that old.
Well, whatever. It came from the maybe that'll help. But more likely, replacing your Netgear will make the difference. Routers are just kind of simple computers. They're solid state. If you touch it, you'll notice they get very hot.
Yeah.
In my opinion, they wear out in a few years. Plus, technology's advanced all the time. So getting a new router every few years, I think we should all just consider that part of the cost of doing business. You should upgrade it. You'll want to upgrade it with a router that supports the newer technologies. Now, your XP machine probably does not support 802.11ac. That's the current Wi-Fi spec. There was B first, and then there was A, and then there was G, and then there was N, and now they're at AC. AC is smart about bandwidth shaping, a little smarter than N was, its predecessor, and might just by itself help you get better bandwidth. But you're not going to see the full benefit on a really old machine.
I was looking at the Norton Core until I kind of looked up some information on it, and it seems like it might be overkill plus.
Yeah, you don't need Norton.
The thing I have to renew, and I don't.
Yeah, you don't need Norton. The problem with XP is Microsoft no longer gives you patches or updates. Yeah. So you're really, that's a pretty antiquated operating system.
And that's the one I'm looking to replace.
Yeah, I would replace that for sure. That, by the way, will probably by itself improve your internet access considerably.
Really?
And if you get a newer computer, it's going to support this new 802.11ac standard. So you will want to get an AC router, and it will do a better job. In my opinion, you're going to get more bandwidth to share anyway, yeah, and will do a better job of balancing your access and his access. One of the reasons he's faster than you is he's closer to the router, isn't he?
No.
He's not?
Not really. The router's upstairs, and he's, we're both downstairs.
Okay.
Most of the time.
Okay. Be better. It would certainly help if you can get the router downstairs, if that's where you're using the computers.
Well, the modem is upstairs. That's
Yeah. You
up there.
You might ask the phone company, hey, is there any way we can move this modem downstairs? It probably would work plugged into any, in fact, it certainly would work plugged into any jack in the house. If you have phone jacks downstairs, it'll work there,
he
too.
He was commenting or talking something about an Orbi, and I'm not sure what that is.
I like that a lot. So there's new categories of routers. They're very expensive. Orbi's $300, but they're what we call mesh routers, and they're designed to spread the Wi-Fi throughout the house. If you have a large house, you'll notice they're dead spots.
Yeah.
They're places that, you know, Wi-Fi is just either very slow or non-existent. Uh-huh. So these mesh routers, there are a number of companies making these. The Eero's, they're a sponsor. The Netgear makes the Orbi, which I really like. It's the fastest one out there. Yeah, if you can see your way clear to buying an Orbi, what you'll do is you'll put the base unit up there by the modem, because that's where the modem is.
Uh-huh.
But you'll have a satellite, a second unit, that you'll put downstairs, and that will absolutely improve your throughput.
How much do they run? Yeah,
about $300 for the two units. All of these mesh systems are roughly $300 and up. But one of the advantages is, how big is the house? How many square feet?
Well, upstairs and downstairs total is about 2,000.
Okay.
2,200.
It's kind of a normal size house, not super huge.
Yeah.
Two units would be fine. They do about 1,500 square feet each.
Uh-huh.
So they easily cover the upstairs and the downstairs without any problem. If you wanted to expand it, maybe you want to have the shop out back or something, you can add a third unit. They communicate with each other to share the internet access, and then they communicate with your device. The other advantage the Orbi will have for you, especially if you get a new computer, is you'll probably end up, his old Mac won't be able to do more than the 2.4 gigahertz band, but you'll be able to do 5 gigahertz. Putting you and your son on different bands will absolutely help any congestion problems you're getting. So the Orbi's nice. You don't need to spend that much money. You can go to ASUS and get one of their AC 1800s or 3200s. Those are very good for about two-thirds the price, about $200.
Is that a router type?
Yeah, it's a router. Yep. It's a Wi-Fi router. That's what you're shopping for, a Wi-Fi router.
You said ASUS.
ASUS. I think given that the router, that the modem is upstairs and you're downstairs, you probably would do better with the Orbi.
Yeah.
Get your son to split it with you.
Okay.
And I think that's marvelous. The other thing I like about mesh routers compared to these other routers, they update automatically.
So would I still be using the Netgear, or is it?
Nope, you're replacing it.
Okay.
You're replacing it with another Netgear.
Okay.
The newest Netgear, the Orbi, O-R-B-I. I think that's a very good choice. Because they update automatically, you know, routers turn out to be a big security problem on the internet, because most people don't ever check and update their routers, and unfortunately most router manufacturers don't bother to keep their routers up to date. But these new mesh routers, that's one of the pledges Netgear and Eero and Google and everybody else makes, is we're not only going to keep our routers up to date to prevent attacks like the new crack attack, things like that, but we're going to push those updates out automatically so you don't have to check.
Yeah.
It'll just like Windows. Windows gets automated. Well, not yours anymore, but you'll see when you get a new Windows, it gets updated automatically. Your routers need to be updated automatically. And so I strongly urge, I understand that they're much more expensive. I think that's another thing I want people to start thinking is not only replace your router more often, but stop thinking of the $40 Linksys as a good router. It isn't.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to you get what you pay for. And frankly, you need to spend, I think you need to spend at least $150 to get a decent router.
Yeah.
It's worth it. It's worth it. And in this case, this is, I know it's $300. It's expensive, but it is.
You retired. It's time I turn around.
I know. And I'm sorry about that. And so I'll tell you what, you can look. There's a great website called The Wire Cutter. They're owned by the New York Times. They got bought out a couple of months ago. The Wire Cutter does reviews of everything, including routers.
Uh-huh.
And they have very good recommendations for Wi-Fi routers that are less expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So let me just check what the best wireless router they say right now is the Netgear R7000P. R7000P. It's easy to set up, has good range and speed, and it's $150 instead of $300.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's the one that they right now they like, the Nighthawk from Netgear. But
yeah.
So that if money is an issue, and I understand it always is, that might be a better idea for you. And you're going to want to get a new computer. I think that will you'll benefit from that as well. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Last segment of the day, of the weekend even. Thanks to Michael Cozio spinning the hits. Thanks to Kim Schaffer answering the phones. Thanks to you, of course, for being here. Can't do talk radio without lots of callers. You guys are great. Nathan's next from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hi, Nathan. Uh-oh. Did I do something wrong? I pushed the button.
Oh, yeah.
You were on mute. You were mute. I know you were. I could tell.
I was on mute, yeah. Sorry.
Hi, Nathan.
Hey. Hey. So I was listening to you yesterday, and I heard the call about Google Voice, and it made me want to call in because after almost a decade on iOS, I finally made the switch, and I got a Pixel 2 XL, largely based on your reviews.
How do you like it?
Love it.
Oh, good.
The camera is just phenomenal.
Isn't it amazing?
Between that and the iPhone X, and I just decided to get off that bandwagon,
yeah.
And I made the switch, and I couldn't be happier.
Good.
So
I also a very happy Pixel 2 XL user.
It's
awesome. A shame because the early reviews were so negative, and I think this is a great phone. I don't have any of the problems people talked about. The screen looks great.
And just the options that I have in Android now.
That's right. And some people don't like that because more options means more choices. Some people just want to use the phone. But if you're the kind of person that likes to customize it, it's great.
Well, yeah, and the whole, like, now that my messages are green, you'd think people have just lost their minds. Your messages are wrong.
What's going on? Have you stopped being an iPhone user? If you like to tweak your friends, that's a good way to do it, too.
It is funny. There's just so many different ways to message people now, too.
I agree. Apple Messages is great. Look, there's nothing wrong with Apple Messages.
Right.
It's a lock-in, though, because it's only on Apple stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good.
Well, I know. Well, so regarding the Google Voice call,
yes.
I've had Google Voice for years. I decided to, and this was kind of an involved process. It was interesting, but I decided to port my AT&T cell number that I had on my iPhone to Google Voice.
Okay, so that's now your Google Voice. Now, are you using AT&T for your Pixel 2 XL?
Well, yeah. So this is what happened. So I ported it with Google Voice.
Yeah.
And then a day later, my service got canceled.
Yes.
By AT&T, but I knew that was going to happen.
You took it away from them.
I did, yeah. So I called AT&T back, and I just added a line because I've got a family plan and everything.
That's
so
right.
We just added another line.
That's right.
So the Google Voice is working great on my old AT&T cell number regarding getting and sending and receiving messages.
Yeah, and the reason you took that number with you is so that people wouldn't have to get a new number for you. They could use your old number, and instead of going to AT&T, it'd go right into Google Voice.
Well, I could have transferred. I mean, I'm staying with AT&T, and I could have just transferred my SIM and just kept my number, but I like the flexibility.
No, I completely understand. I don't give out any number by Google Voice number now because that's how you reach me.
Yeah, so the Google Voice app works great on it, but the only hang-up I have is, and I thought you could do this, but apparently you can't. And that's ultimately my question for you is, I would like to be able to make Google Voice the default messaging app.
Yeah, you can't.
It seems like there's a way to do it. Okay.
You can make Hangouts the default messaging app, however. And that's kind of what they want you to do.
Okay.
But, and if you remember the call from yesterday, Google has the most confusing messaging strategy. I almost want to say messaging message. You could imagine. They don't seem to know themselves what they want to do. So they have Android Messenger, which you can also use. They have Hangouts. Hangouts is a second-class citizen unless you're a Google Fi subscriber, which you're not. But it will. But you can use Hangouts with Google Voice. In fact, you'll notice your Hangouts messages show up on Google Voice. So what I would suggest, the Android, unlike the iPhone, will let you choose the default messaging app. Even more than Apple, they'll let you use a non-Google app for that. You can use Facebook Messenger if you want. You could use WhatsApp. You could use Telegram. Or you can use one of the half dozen different Google messaging programs. Weirdly, the one you can't use was the one I'd like to use, which is Google's Allo, A-L-L-O. Can't be used as SMS. Oh, yeah. That's what it makes me nuts. I use Hangouts. I think you can use Hangouts successfully. They have changed what Hangouts can do. I don't know about SMS messaging, but try it.
I made the Google Voice app, you know, my dialer.
Yeah, you can do that, but it won't let you make it your messaging app.
Yeah, so I can't, like, dictate to it to call somebody.
I know.
So I have a new number that's tied to my AT&T, but I don't want to give out that number. I just don't even want to deal with any of that. So.
No, that number you hide because you may go to a different carrier. You want it from now on. Your Google Voice number is your one and only true official number. And you just forward it to whatever phone you're using. It solves a problem for me because I'm always using – I have an iPhone 10 and a Pixel 2 and a Note 8. I use all three. If you call me on my Google Voice number, all three will ring, and I just pick it up on whichever phone I happen to have in my pocket. That's a great feature. You can have it ring your home number as well if you want. The where you get into trouble and when it gets a little weird is with this messaging thing. Because for one thing, you don't want a message from your AT&T number. You want your message to be coming from your Google Voice number.
Yeah.
So I would say that what you want to do is use Hangouts. It won't send SMS because it's not going to use AT&T's SMS system. It will send it as a multi.
Right.
It'll send an MMS. But from anybody you're talking to isn't going to know the difference. It'll come into their phone as an SMS.
Yeah.
So I think that's
the
solution.
Google Voice finally put MMS on. That was the one thing that was holding me back.
Yeah. But I am terrified of what Google's plans are for Hangouts. It doesn't seem clear whether they like it or don't like it. Frankly, same thing for Google Voice. The only reason I have high hopes for Google Voice is they at least updated it recently. So that makes me think, well, they're not killing it yet anyway. Hangouts has another advantage. You can use it on your desktop. If you use Google Chrome, you can add the Hangouts extension to Google Chrome.
Well, that's why I wanted Google Voice, because I wanted to be able to message from a computer or my phone.
But you use Hangouts for that. Yeah, use Hangouts for that. And so it becomes pretty much the equivalent of Apple's messages, except that it works everywhere.
Exactly.
I even use Hangouts on my iPhone. So I think that's your solution. I admit that may not be the perfect solution because of Google's very strange attitudes towards messaging.
Well, it's surprising. It's a Google phone.
I know.
They own Android.
I know. Google has this new system they want everybody to use instead of SMS or MMS called RCS. But they've had a hard time getting carriers to get behind it. It's a data-based, open, standard messaging system. Google's Android Messenger uses RCS, so that's why they're pushing their Android Messenger, but it doesn't do that thing that you want to do, which is use it on the desktop as well as on the phone.
Okay.
Have you tried Hangouts?
Yeah, I'm using Hangouts. My wife and I message with that, but mostly using just the stock Google Voice app.
What you can do is you can go into apps in your settings. And in the advanced section of apps, there's default apps. And you can set your default messaging app to be that or other messengers.
Oh, because the only option I saw for that was Facebook Messenger.
Yeah. Once you've installed Google's Hangouts, it can be your default, I believe. Now,
I didn't think so.
Oh, maybe not. Oh, that's not good. So the reason it is for me is because I'm using Google Fi on my Pixel 2.
Okay.
And maybe that is not available to you. I see Hangouts, Signal, Android Messages. If I had Facebook Messenger, I'd see that. If I had WhatsApp, I'd see that. So you that is one of the advantages of Android. You could use a variety of third-party messaging apps. So maybe if Hangouts isn't available, you do use Facebook Messenger because that has a desktop component, or you use WhatsApp.
Tried that, but it actually sends my AT&T cell number out.
Yeah, that's what you don't want it to do. Yeah, they don't. The messaging component of Google Voice is Hangouts, and if they won't let you use that for SMS, well, I don't know what. Google.
Yeah, it's just the dictating part that's a little
Google,
bit
Google. I know. Hey, I got to run. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.